Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to tonight's Friday on the Front Porch edition of The Horn. We'll sort of catch up with stuff from previously in the week and have a darn fine time doing it. Kind of gray here in the hills and hollers, but you know what? It ain't freezing, so that's a bonus. And I'm happy, and I don't have a space heater going here in the tiny little space that is The Horn studio. And yet, I am still comfortable. I like that a lot. You know, most times, except in the height of summer and the miserable depths of winter, we can do a show back here without having to worry about the, you know, artificial heat or cooling. It's pleasant, it's tranquil, it's wonderful. And in this case, I'm sitting here with the very last, because I've doled them out to myself as though they were precious, because they have been. I received the News Ninja Susan put me on, well, she had previously put Agnes on to something called the Republic of Tea, and Agnes was thrilled with it, and Susan didn't want me being left out, so she sent me a little traveler's tin, which I'm going to hang on to because it's just cute as heck and handy as hell, a little traveler's tin of ginger peach decaf. You know me, I'm decaffeinated. Now I'll get the emails about, what a wussy you are. Oh, you're decaf, Bob. You don't want to see me on caffeine. You listen to the program, don't you? Speed me up a little bit. Just do that and see how you like it. It ain't fun. But anyway, so I'm sitting here having the last bag of ginger peach decaf tea, which is just damned pleasant. And it's really tea, you know, it's decaffeinated tea. It's not all herbs and flowers and butterfly wings and so forth. There's real tea taste in there, too, plus ginger, plus the taste of peaches, which I adore. And, I'm ready for 3 hours of radio. How about you? And I think we've got 3 hours of radio in us tonight for this Friday on the Front Porch. You know how Friday on the Front Porch runs. Really, if I'm to be completely honest with you and utterly candid, I have to say that, well, Friday on the Front Porch is no different from any other day of the week, except for Moran Monday and Wednesday prayer meeting. And frankly, they're no different from any other day of the week, because the Morans ye have always with ye. And so too with the religious fundamentalists. And we've got some Moran stories tonight, and we've got some religious fundamentalist stories tonight. But the principle behind Friday on the Front Porch actually arose back when we had a fully functioning telephone hybrid. And I can still do it to a certain extent. It has a whole lot more to do with not what's going on here, but with the fact that in this day and age there are 9 million different kinds of phones. That means you have 9 million different kinds of audio quality. But the purpose, the idea behind Front Porch Friday, used to be to bring on two or three different members of the Horn family, and I would sort of sit back and relax and listen to you guys converse with each other, and it would sort of be like letting me have a Friday where I got to listen to the show instead of doing it, you see. And, you know, we can try that once in a while if you want to. If we've got a bunch of people stacked up on the lines, we'll see if it works. Yeah, why not? It is Friday, the 15th of January, 2009, unless I am profoundly mistaken. No. Okay. Yeah. No. We're good. I got my tea. I'm comfortable. I'm not burning up. I'm not freezing to death. I can still feel my toes. Everything is in good shape, except for the rest of the world. My world is fine. How about yours? Well, if your world is okay, you know, tolerable, fair to Midland, the rest of the world is not. I mean, honest to God, what has the Republican Party come to when they're out there actually running for election to the Senate of the United States, a guy whose claim to fame is having bared it all for Cosmopolitan? No, really, really. This clown that the teabaggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters are running for the Senate in the state of Massachusetts and have put millions of, I mean, they're putting everything they've got in. See, when they've got one race to focus on, that's where there's trouble. We talked about this a little bit with Wayne last night toward the end of the program. If they only have to do one thing, teabaggers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, and booger eaters can usually do that one thing. And so all they've got to do is focus on Massachusetts, and they know that they have screwed America for good. I don't know what liberal organizations are doing in Massachusetts. I hope they're doing everything they can do to get the Democrat elected up there. But the fact of the matter is, Scott Brown is a boy toy. Scott Brown is a former stud muffin ex-Cosmo model who in his interview for Cosmo said, well, you know, I've got more than a little patriot in me. Huh. You think I'm making this up? I'm not. But Freedom Works, which is an AstroTurf group fronted by Wall Street, is mobilizing the Get Out the Votes efforts all over Massachusetts in this coming weekend for the Tuesday election. Freedom Works, of course, was behind the very first teabag protests. And they have done all kinds of astroturfing all over the country. You'll remember that Freedom Works is headed by Dick Armey. And, you know, if you're going to have a Dick Armey, you need a Dick Armey leading it. But they're behind, what do you call it? I guess Centerfold. They're behind Centerfold Scott Brown. And another front group that does its dirty work in behalf of our Wall Street bettors, the Club for Growth. We better not. See the trouble I get into? See how easily and how early it happens? Here I am talking about a Cosmo Centerfold, and we're talking about a Club for Growth. Trust me, please, believe me, I try to run a fairly family-friendly show. And it's not my fault. I didn't mean to have a story about a family values candidate in Massachusetts. That's how we say it in Alabama, you know, Massachusetts. Because somehow or another, really, ask any Southerner. Any Southerner who grew up in the South will tell you sooner or later that he had a teacher, a Sunday school teacher, some elder somewhere who pronounced M-A-S-S-A-C-H-U-S-E-T-T-S, Massachusetts. Kid you not. But we got a family values pig licking running in Massachusetts. And he's sort of a living embodiment of Ray Stevens's The Streak. Oh, yeah, and there's Ray Stevens stuff tonight. I've been meaning to get to that. Yeah, you'll all be screaming for Mike Malloy's ice pick to put in your ears by the time this thing's over. And it's a teabagger anthem. It works perfectly. But, you know, here I am talking about this man candy, and he's being supported by the Club for Growth. Irony is lost on these poor, benighted right-wing nimnals. And you know what? We're going to find out something. We're already finding out something about the right wing. You know, John Ensign, he had a long-running, nasty, hot, sweaty sexual affair with his best friend's wife and paid her and then dumped her and then got his mama and daddy to pay off the husband like it's some sort of 3,000-year-old Middle Eastern transaction. We got him, and he was forgiven. John Ensign's absolutely A-OK with Repig Lickens in Nevada. He's A-OK with Repig Lickens everywhere, even though he's a perv. Larry Wide Stance Craig is A-OK with Repig Lickens everywhere, even though he's a Minnesota airport restroom hustling perv. He's A-OK. He's all right. Yeah. Hey, we all like to do it, right? Even in the family values types, even the ones who want to defend merge. And now we've got a guy being backed by the Club for Growth who, frankly, exposed his Club for Growth on the pages of Cosmo magazine back several lots of years ago. And it's A-OK. On the other hand, let a liberal female run for office whose bodacious tata... bodacious tatas, see what it does to me? Have been exposed on the pages of any magazine, be it Esquire or GQ or Maxim or For Him Only, Playboy, whatever. And the right-wingers who will tolerate marital infidelity and spitting upon the institution of marriage, they'll tolerate that and not only tolerate it but condone it from one of their own, will be out in the streets pointing fingers at said woman with said bodacious tatas that were exposed in some whatever magazine, and they'll be screaming, "Harlot! Stone the harlot! Kill the harlot! Run the harlot out of town! Ooh, what are we going to tell our children?" Am I right? Yeah. And meanwhile, the Club for Growth will say, "We are proud to stand behind Scott Brown." Well, you better stand behind him, because, my God, I wouldn't stand in front of him. Never mind. So we got that going on. Well, let's just do this. Let's do this real quick. Just because, let's do this for Scott Brown. I think we ought to. Because he is the darling of the teabaggers right now. And see, we got a naked guy. We got a naked guy running as the darling of the teabaggers. Supported by the Club for Growth. Irony is dead. But I offer it because, and you know, I saw the Cosmo photo artfully folded over. I saw the Cosmo photo of Scott Brown, sexiest man in America. And it was, like I said, it was artfully folded over in the middle there, so you couldn't see the staple in his Big Jim the Twins. And I was immediately reminded of Ray Stevens' The Streak, in which he screams, "Don't look, Ethel!" But she done got an eye full. And then there's Ray Stevens with an anthem that has been picked up and is adored by the teabagging right wing. I offer you Ray Stevens' We the People, dedicated to Scott Brown and his Club for Growth. We the People.
A big heartbreaker. Grandma needs a new pacemaker. And the doctor says, "I realize she's ill." But there's talk of legislation on all our medication. And maybe all we can do is put her on a pain pill. Oh, me. Hey, Congress, you vote Obamacare. The people have awakened to your tricks. You vote to let this pass. You be out on your cause. We the people have awakened. And to put it in words you might understand, if you had the common sense that God gave a billy goat, you'd
You've no doubt noticed that your constituents, the electorate, that's us voters, are on to your pork barrel special interest tax and spend scam. Or to put it more succinctly...
Time out! You know, we talked earlier in the week about the fact that the conserva creeps are humorly challenged. That's funny. A twangy, I don't know, Fender Telecaster laden backing music thing with Ray Stevens going. You know, it's been said in comedy that you can never really, you can never really surpass a good poop joke, or a good fart joke, or a good. Because that's some funny. Well, let's keep up with the right wing funny.
Beck and Limbaugh, what you got in mind for Grandma? We found this O'Reilly fella on Fox. We're kind of like Joe the Plumber, and when we crunch the numbers...
Did he say crotch the numbers? Has he been hanging out with Scott Brown? Never mind.
It all adds up to voting you out at the ballot box. You vote Obamacare, we're gonna vote you out of there. We the people have awakened to your tricks. You vote to let this pass, you're gonna be out on your... Cause we the people have awakened, and to put it mildly, we're harboring feelings of extreme alienation due to copious amounts of horse manure that have been shoveled out of the White House and the Capitol building, and we sense that we are being royally defecated upon. Yeah, we're getting the impression that you think we are not relevant to these proceedings and dismissing our input into the situation. And please tell Nancy Pelosi we're going to do the hokey-pokey. Put the right ones in, pull the left ones out. Have awakened to your tricks. You vote to let this pass, you're gonna be out on your own. Yeah, we the people have awakened, and you might want to start looking for another line of work. How about the medical profession? Yeah, they're gonna need everybody they can get that'll put up with the red tape and the pay cut. Hey, why don't you kill every last job, tax every last penny, and infringe on every last God-given right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Because let me tell you, ain't nobody happy with you. We the people have awakened, and it occurs to me that you might really like it down in Venezuela.
Jesus, that pisses me off. Oh, my. How to begin? Well, let's look at it this way. There are a lot of angry people in this country right now. There are two sorts of angry people in this country right now. There are those who are intelligent and informed and have done their best to find out for themselves the facts on the ground, and have been made very angry by it. And then there are conserva creeps, and teabaggers, and birthers, deathers, tenthers, and booger eaters. And they are eating up Ray Stevens with spoons. You know, there are visuals in that video of a nurse suffocating an old woman. Now, it's all done in real funny-like. But it's just another sad, sorry, miserable, dirty repetition of a filthy lie that has been promulgated from sea to shining sea, if you will, as it were. We're informed and we're angry. I'm frustrated as hell. But I'm not frustrated for the reasons that the teabaggers are frustrated. I'm frustrated, what we were talking about last night with Haiti, I'm frustrated because we created most of the problem that undergirded what the earthquake destroyed. We're responsible for that. More than. And as such, there's a lot to be angry about. I'm mad as hell that we're not going to get universal single-payer health care. Because it's what we need. I'm mad as hell that habeas corpus is still not fully functional within the constitutional framework of this country. I'm mad as hell that we've still got an open concentration camp at Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, and that now we've had the magnificent idea of, hey, let's send some Haitian refugees there. Holy. And it all hangs in the balance. What little good is available hangs in the balance of an election in Massachusetts on Tuesday. And I've got a case of the creeps that won't quit. My skin is crawling. That mythical 60-vote majority goes away if every last person of good conscience and decent liberal tendencies doesn't go to the polls in Massachusetts on Tuesday. What will the weather be like? You know, the weather, bad weather pushes down polling numbers. What has the right wing got up its sleeve to keep people at home? How many dirty tricks have they already played that we don't know about? It's gonna be a cheek squeezing time between here and Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning, until we find out just how screwed we are. And if a piece of Cosmo man candy winds up representing the people of Massachusetts, I don't know. Do you just declare the experiment over? I don't know. If you're in Massachusetts, what are you doing to get people out to the polls? What are you doing to make sure that they understand that Massachusetts at this point in time, I'm sorry, is responsible for the well-being of the nation? One state. How do you convey that to people? The gravity, the seriousness of it all. You want dead granny? Let this conservative creep into the United States Senate from Massachusetts. You'll get dead granny, dead granddaddy, dead uncle, dead auntie, dead brother, dead sister, dead cousin, dead friend, dead neighbor, dead unknowns. 45,000 a year and climbing will continue if this creep gets into office. Such are the stakes with which we deal. Let's go forthwith to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
At the call, listen, how do we get, it's amazing. I read that Obama's on his way down there on Sunday. I mean, wouldn't it just snap to attention today? You know what I mean? It's stunning what's going on. I'm just sort of sitting here looking at this thinking, I don't know if to laugh or cry because it's some sort of tragic comedy and the joke's really on us because, I'm sorry, I have to blame a lot of this on the really lame leadership,
How do you not? How do you not?
Because there's no reason this should be coming on. It's unbelievable that the Democrats are so inept. I mean, that Obama started out from such a weak hand when he had all the momentum you could possibly want. You know what I mean?
Is it? I mean, we're still not quite a year. We're still not quite to the 1 year anniversary. Can we say at this point that he has been less than impressive?
Well, if, you know, it's just sort of the moves are just bizarre. I mean, if for some reason this woman, who I hear has run a really hideously bad campaign, if she wins it, great, I guess. But, you know, to me, the fact that we're here, is it really that surprising? It seems to just read the script with the Democrats. But the guy, I mean, you know, he what do you have, half a hand over his junk? That's not very impressive.
You know, there's two or three different directions I can take from that comment, Sandra, but I'm not going to take any of them because I'm...
I know, but I just couldn't resist. When I looked, I thought, ew, small hand, and it ain't, you know, what's happening?
Yeah, we got it, yeah. Because, you know what, there wouldn't have been no hands, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, right, well...
Yeah, he needs a club for growth.
Yeah, exactly. No, that was killing me, you know, you really... And that was, I don't like spiders and snakes, that was singing.
No, that was the streak and Ahab the Arab and...
Oh, okay. Listen, that is just so... These, singers, oh, God, give me a break, you know?
You know, this is just, I mean, this one is particularly... Ray Stevens has gone hardcore right wing, in the last, I don't know, maybe he always was. But just to sit there and propagate all that... I mean, I understand humor. I understand parody. I laughed my fool little head off when The Streak came out and I was a kid. Because it was cute. You know, the idea of Ethel, you know, working through the grocery store, trying to keep the streaker in her sights, you know, or at the basketballs, you know. It was funny. But this isn't political this isn't social commentary. This is political advocacy. And it is political advocacy that has been adopted wholesale by the teabaggers. And is being offered as an artistic rendering of truth, Sandra.
Oh, no, but it's just, you know, it just falls in line with that Freedom Party. And, you know, it's also, it's just oozing, you know, of the corporatism. You know what I mean? It's not even right-wing populism anymore. I just think it's just the underpinning or the know-nothings who are now the foot soldiers for something they don't even realize is about to put a foot on their neck. That's what's so disturbing because...
Yeah, they're grinding the bayonet blades that are going to be used on them.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. And, you know, I get sick of these so-called arts coming out with this crap. What was that last bit? Go to Venezuela? Yeah, give me a ticket, yo. I'll go check that out. You know what I'm saying? For a minute. At this point, I don't know what Obama's going to do if this election goes... the way it looks like it's going. You said something last night that I almost spit out when I was drinking. You said, bring me another bucket of popcorn. I almost died because I'm like, that's about how I'm feeling.
Well, at this point, what's left? You know, Sue, ELO in the chat room is pointing out as far as Ray Stevens is concerned, you know, thanks to Ray Stevens, we laughed at the Shriners. Even though no other group does more for burned and crippled children, regardless of a family's ability to pay in this country. You know, there's an underpinning of nastiness that goes with what passes for right-wing humor. You know, we documented it earlier in the week. You know, when you're passing off rape jokes as funny stuff, referring to Rachel Maddow as the sexiest man alive, and expecting people, oh damn, that's funny. You got a problem.
Oh, no, I mean, but it's just, yeah, it's just really sort of hateful humor, and it's, you know, punitive, like they are, you know what I mean? They're really sort of nasty people who, you know, want things to get more miserable, I guess. I mind you, the Democrats seem to be holding that torch pretty well at the moment, but if they got in, we both know how horrible it can get, at least, you know what I mean?
Well, there's, yeah, and that's what I'm trying to point out, Sandra. There's a difference between our anger versus theirs.
No, I mean, I'm a bitch day in every time I call you about our situation, but trust and believe, I know exactly what's coming down the pike if them MFers get back in. You know what I mean? Please. And that's why it's...
And what's important to note here is that in this instance, all they need is one.
Well, no, but see, that's also, you know, it's so disgusting because if this is, I don't, you know, they they really need to utilize their majority. Once it's 60, it's so illiberal and undemocratic at this point. And now we're going to see the whole thing unravel because of this one mid, you know, special election. And of all seats for Kennedy, I mean, it's just a joke. I mean, he must be spinning. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And yet I saw on the story that showed the picture of Scott Brown with his little hand covering, well, you know.
Yeah.
There was a comment down thread that said, I'm voting for Scott Brown to replace Senator Kennedy. And by the way, congratulations, Senator Kennedy. You've been sober for 6 months. They're evil, Sandra.
Yeah, no, that's, you know what?
Because, again, there are right-wingers out there that read that and went, oh, look at that, that's funny.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just, I don't even know what to say. I'm just sort of, I'm so disturbed that the Democrats couldn't get it enough together to at least have, you know, it's a Democratic state, and they're about to, what, let this man seat? He held it for 40 years? Come, it's just, it's unbelievable. It is unbelievable.
Well, I mean, is there a chance? I mean, could this guy win?
Well, I don't. I mean, I'm just saying. It sounds like they, you know, the panic buttons are going off, and that's who. I mean, if old Bummer is coming out, shit, you know, he wasn't, and I don't know if it's going to help. Might make the panicking look worse. You know.
I know, and. And you're absolutely right in what you say, Sandra. This is a manifestation of the absolute undemocratic quality of the United States Senate. The idea that the entire American populace could be held hostage by one former stripper from Massachusetts, that's the direct antithesis of anything remotely resembling democracy.
Yeah, and it's just so. I realize that it takes 67. Votes in the Senate to rewrite rules, right? If they wanted to change the filibuster, they would need 67 votes.
No. No.
No.
No. I mean, do you remember when Bill the Cat Killer Frist was talking about the nuclear option?
I thought that was just for judicial. For appointments and stuff.
No, he was gonna get rid of the filibuster.
Oh, okay. No, see, because I know that was in 2005, and I thought it so. They were threatening to get rid of it if they didn't let their stupid judges get appointed.
All we want is an up or down vote.
Right. Okay. So I'm sorry. This is so much more serious. And watch, if this guy wins, are you going to sit around expecting Harry Reid to use his wield his power?
No. Harry Reid will say, "Please let us have an up or down vote, or I'll ask you to let us have an up or down vote again." This man won't even force somebody to filibuster.
Right. I mean, it's just the
I mean, the real kind, like we were talking about.
Right. So the capitulation will be. I mean, the idea that Obama's going out there, obviously, yeah, he's probably freaking out. Is there a chance that they can get this sorted before Tuesday?
if they don't, and he wins, there's trouble in River City.
I mean, I don't even want to laugh. I mean, trust me, it's a bit sardonic, but I just am sort of like, you know, this is just it's just such a bad movie, Bob. Listen, I have to mention one thing that was killing me. You know, back to Pat Robertson, that, the jigging has to stop.
Yeah.
Christy Watts, the Negro that he has sitting next to, she need to be slapped. Okay? I hope that girl getting paid. She just smiling. I'm like, dude.
And she's
anyway,
and she's smiling and she yeah and that's what she's getting paid for.
No, but she always she always pops up when he's dropping these horror show comments and she just smiling. I'm like, oh no, the jigging must stop on her. Sorry, I just had to bring it up because I'm thinking when I look at Sister, that's not a sister, and so I looked her up and boy, it's on and cracking.
You did the background work?
Yeah, I had to. I said, because my friend Carrie said, is she black? You know how we are. I said, yeah, look, good hair. And then we went and looked it up, and I'm like, oh, no. You know, the Pantene hair, the whole nine yards. But no, She really needs to stop.
Everybody need a job somewhere, I reckon.
But, I know. It's just, she got to be getting paid. It's,
But you know what? I mean, white folks don't have a lock on evangelical fundamentalism.
Oh, no, no. I know. I just said it was just funny looking at her sitting there when he was saying that. I'm like, ew, why didn't he drag one of his, you know, it's just, he's horrible. He's a horror show.
Well, you know, every one of these right-wing women, whether it's her with Pat Robertson or Rexella Van Impey. No, I wish I was making that up.
Oh, my God.
You know, if your name was Rexella, why would the first thing you did in the morning not be a trip to the courthouse for the name change papers?
Oh, immediately, straight away.
But they all sit there with this look on their face, and, wow, this is deep cultural reference. You remember when John Belushi played Woody Hayes on Saturday Night Live, and Gilda Radner played his wife, and this was after Woody had roughed up the player thing. And Gilda just sat there in the skit with this glazed look on her face, you know, the 50 mile abused person stare. All these right wing evangelical women have that look on their face.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
Because remember, they're supposed to submit to men as the church submits to Christ.
Oh God. Yeah, it's,
I mean, remember.
No, it's just stunning. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, you know.
No, that's okay. No, it needed.
I had to throw that in because it was just making, I mean, I was laughing.
That was work needed done, and I appreciate you doing the backgrounder.
Oh, God, you know, I have to go back to class in a week, so I might as well, you know.
Yes, your young charges have had a month now to get. Lots of teabagging and birther and deather and done. The work is only going to get harder, Sandra.
Oh, God. Well, no, you know, back to this election. Seriously, this is just, I mean, I always wonder about people who say, oh, no, I'm not interested in politics. How can you not be interested in it? This is just nonstop drama that's going on in this country.
This is 8 miles past Dallas and Falcon Crest and all of that crap all rolled together.
It is. It's just craziness. I was just like, you're kidding me with this, you know? And then you have the cast of characters, you know? It's just, and it wasn't so serious. You know, it would be really entertaining. Say if we were living in, you know, Clinton's time when you could get a job, it would be much more entertaining. But we're not.
And that's the thing. There's a lot on the line with this stuff. I mean,
this stuff is deadly serious, you know.
And that's a saying. That's a term of art. But it is. It is going to be deadly serious. The choice that people in Massachusetts make on Tuesday may very well condemn to death another year's worth of 45,000 American citizens.
No, and you know, we see how captive everything is when you and I are sitting here discussing this one election turning everything on a dime. There's something so very wrong with this system.
Well, and you know, I always watch the chat room during the show as well, and I noticed that Lottie, who is from Massachusetts, is and has been watching all of this. He says that this is a single issue election. This is an election that is being cast in terms of screw everything else. We got to get somebody in there that'll stop this here socialized medicine. Now, who's going to be more motivated to go to the polls? I guess that's the ultimate question, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I've been sort of looking at what a couple of blogs. I mean, it looks like, you know, there's some sort of get out the vote thing going on. But I don't even know what the voting rules are in Massachusetts. I mean, is it 15 days? Can you vote on the day? Do you have to register 30 days ago? I mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's all part of the Byzantine nature of allowing the several states to run their own election laws.
No, I understand, but I'm saying I don't know what it is.
I don't either.
So I might have to look that up.
Well, we'll have an answer from Lottie here presently. He's in the chat room, and you know, Lottie, is it, you know, what do you do when you register? How late can you register? How did, you know, what kind of get out the vote effort and registration effort? How much of an impact can that have at this late date?
And then there's the holiday. You know, I mean, who knows what sort of impact that's going to have? You know, I mean, there's so many factors involved with people voting in this country because it's made so damn difficult. You know.
Yeah, and you know that's one of those things, and I don't know. Maybe it's probably about 952nd on Obama's list. Federalize the election laws. You know, you would think we would have learned from Florida in 2000. We need a uniform set of election laws, uniform ballot qualifications, because if it's not uniform, it ain't democracy.
Oh no, I mean the state by state. I mean it all plays to less people voting and the sort of medieval felony rules, and if you get in trouble with the law, you can lose your right to vote forever in states like Florida. I mean, all of it is just so, I don't know.
Well, that's like here in some states, after you've been convicted of a felony and you've done your time and served your penalty, it is easier to get your right to a gun back than it is to get your right to vote back.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, like I said, franchises lost forever in Florida, and I think a couple of others.
Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi. Do we see a pattern here? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, we know why and what it was directed towards. That's, you know, neither here nor there. But I am sort of, you know, I would like to think that the woman can pull it out on Tuesday, but I don't know. I can't believe the Democrats are going to be handed their ass so soon. It's not even close to November yet.
But if that does happen, the right wing will absolutely be unbearable. See, this is a predictor of November 2010. We're taking back the country.
Well, yeah, it can all go down. I'm saying this can all go down, you know, really quickly. Hence why Obama is rushing to Massachusetts on Sunday. Oh, listen, I guess I'll let you go, but I have one quick, you know, sports thing. That Tennessee shit had me roping. I'm like, oh, you got rid of somebody who was there for 17 years. You hired an asshole, and he screwed you. Okay?
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin, vice president.
Well, here, because of folks like David in Tennessee and Luke also, Luke's right there at ground at Big Orange Ground Zero. I've been getting kept abreast of the situation, and it's zany. Apparently, one of the things that has proved a real problem is that when Lane Kiffin came in, he got guaranteed contracts for all of his assistants.
Yeah, no, he's
so now he's now he's bugged, and he's recruiting his butt off trying to take his recruiting class with him.
Right.
But he's left all those assistants in place, and they've got jobs. And they tried to get David Cutcliffe, who was a long time coordinator under Philip Fulmer at Tennessee, to come back. And he said, well, I want to bring my coaching staff with me. And they said, oh, no, we got contracts with these guys.
Yeah,
and he said, well, see, I'll stay where I am, thanks.
Well, no, but this is the problem with what you mentioned with the paying these a-holes $4 million. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's mercenary. The hell with you. You know, I'm off. I'm off the USC now. So I cannot get upset about Reggie Bush family trying to get a house.
No, I don't think so. No. And you know what?
It's been
under the radar for a good bit and not talked about here that I know of. But there's a lawsuit out there that could change everything because I think he's a former Nebraska quarterback has filed a lawsuit because his likeness was used in one of the EA Sports college football whatever video games, and he was not compensated.
Oh no! Well, see, that's what I'm saying. It's like. It's gone real mercenary, so I can't be hearing about the rules on the students. They can't move, but these freaky coaches who are overpaid can dart around all over the country.
But here's a laugher for you. If I understand this correctly, Lane Kiffin did leave and go to USC, but one of the coaches that he left in place is his brother-in-law, who he didn't take with him.
What about his father?
Dad went with him. Because, frankly, Mike Garrett at USC wanted Ed Orgeron and wanted Monty Kiffin, and to get those two, they had to take baby boy.
Yeah, for the life of me, what has he done? He got fired from the Raiders, 6-7-6 at Tennessee. I guess you can talk a good game because I just see a bunch of BS. And those Tennessee kids, damn, they must have an easy life. I can't believe they burned down the school over that.
Hey, you know, look, it's an SEC football program. It's what some people have instead of religion.
No, they're crazy. And they put that dick on the rock. I'm like, why are you messing up the rock? I'm sorry.
Oh, and our buddy Marty out there in the Bay Area is suggesting, and I've listened to it once. It's darn good. Is suggesting that anybody who wants a darn good sports take, edgeofsports.com/audio.html. But edgeofsports.com, that's Dave Zirin, and he is good.
Oh, yeah, no, I always read. Yeah, his stuff, he kills me. I noticed, the first time I noticed him was when he was writing about Notre Dame, talking about how the whole industrial base of that town is falling apart. That's why they cling so desperately.
And Renee Louise has added a note. She said, yeah, Bob, this guy can win in Massachusetts. Reports don't look good. More importantly, remember, 45.7% of we, the people who voted for McCain and Palin. And the political atmosphere has only worsened. If this guy wins, you can kiss health care goodbye. Dangerous and scary.
Yeah, no, I mean, like we discussed, it's not like Harry Reid is going to put a cape on. He's just going to be even more, weakened.
Yeah.
It's all just... I don't know. So we're supposed to expect this pinup or whatever the hell, this freak, he's going to be a senator in Ted Kennedy's seat. That's a damn shame.
That is, that's almost apocalyptic. That's the end is near.
Unbelievable. And so, oh, my God.
Oh, by the way, you're getting a thanks from David in Tennessee for the Kid Kiffin shout-out.
Yeah.
And with regard to the evangelical sitting next to Pat Robertson and various and sundry other evangelical wives, David adds, look, Bob, it ain't a bad gig. Well, it ain't a bad gig with a little help. Let's touch on the positives of being the evangelical wife. A, big balance trips to any fashion center for wear it once cute clothes. Check. B, once a week trips to Nails R Us. Check. C, unquestioned requests for Dr. Feelgood scripts from the GP in the congregation. Check. D, all the trips to the day spa they can remember to book. Check. E, did I mention the Nails R Us trips? Double check. F, all the Spanish language housekeepers it takes to protect those nails. Check. G, did I mention the very supportive script doc so she feels well enough to really enjoy God's gifts? Double something or check. You start it. See, you, Sandra, you start things.
Listen, no, I mean, it's just been a lot. It's been a lot of jigging this week, starting with Harold Ford, okay?
Oh.
Okay, that jigging is about to be stopped, because it looks like he ain't going nowhere.
Well, you know, he did run it. He ran against Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House and got his gut stomped out.
Oh, but it's because he's dumb. I mean, you know, I don't mean he's dumb, but it's just he got his seat, his father's seat. First of all, when he was 26, I mean, you know, he ain't seen a corporation. He ain't never said no to one. I mean, yuck.
There's a big difference between being a Democratic senator from Tennessee, which would have been good to have, even with all of his negatives,
yeah,
versus the retrograde motion represented by him being a senator from New York. Ooh.
Right, no, there's no way.
And that's not to suggest that Kirsten Gillibrand is some sort of wild-eyed liberal sitting in Bobby Kennedy's seat.
Oh, no, she's not. She's not. But it's just sort of, you know, I just want him to go away. I mean, the fact that he's a vice president at Merrill Lynch.
The fact that he's a commentator on Fox. You know, head of the DLC.
I think that a DLC. Did you see? You saw that picture I sent you, right? Was it unbelievable?
Yes. too way too much at any time of day, before or after my decaf.
I was like, are you kidding me with that picture with the Elmer Fudd hat and the Confederate flag? It was too much. It was too much. And listen, there's just one other subject. I'm still tripping on the please, please, please give us our money back.
Yeah.
It's like the begging. We urge you to, you know, not attack. You know, everything you're urging, it's just begging. All of it is just a bad joke. I can't take it, and I'm sure I'll be calling you next week after this election because it really don't stop.
I'm just deadly afraid that after this election when you call, I don't know, I may not be sober.
I don't know. I'm disturbed by it too. So, and everyone's saying that it looks like a done deal, huh? And that's 6 years, right?
Yeah, that's 6 years. Well, in this case, is it an incomplete? No. This will be 6 years because I mean it's an election cycle and Kerry's not up for re-election. So, I think it's 6 years.
And so they'll have Kerry and this freak from Massachusetts, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and I noticed that Chris Dodd, now all of a sudden he's wavering on this Consumer Protection Agency. Did you hear this?
No.
Yes, Bob. Now that's going to be snatched. Okay? So, anyway, I know it's just a waterfall of bad information. But the football is funny, though. I tell you, the Lane Kiffin story.
Well, this beats watching bowling. Because, you know, that's all we got right now. A couple of playoff games and bowling.
All right, well, yeah, no, and the coaching.
Oh, and by the way, guess who wrote the buyout check for the Kid Kiffin?
Who?
I'm looking for the name right now. I had the email from David earlier today. Jerry Buss, owner of the Lakers.
He looked at a 23-year-old with his ass when he did it, too. That freak. Come on, now.
Yeah.
You heard about him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. That's why I told you. I knew you'd get a kick out of it. And the buyout was only 800 grand.
I know. It was only so little. I'm like, damn, that's not very much. It's like, what's the guy who was the coach of them? Carroll? Pete Carroll?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, what the hell are you going to do with Seattle? I can't.
No. This was all about getting out before the NCAA gets in.
I know. It's true.
And it's going to be over, you know, Reggie Bush getting a house.
And there's another kid there that's I guess, more recent.
But, you know, the backstory humor has really not come out, though, Sandra, because... It was Kiffin who went begging to Mike Garrett for the job, and Mike Garrett, meanwhile, AD at USC, had called all over creation trying to get somebody to take the USC job, and nobody would take it. It's like Rich Rodriguez going to Michigan when Michigan couldn't get Les Miles. Okay, we can't get Les Miles. Is there anybody out there we can talk to? Okay, we talked to them. They don't want it. Rich Rodriguez, maybe?
No, I mean, USC, they had tried to get Del Rio and all these other 10 U.S. NFL coaches who said, that'll be a no. And then they called this clown.
I'll take no for 500, Alex.
Yeah, no, it is true. It has to be one of the funnier stories just because that kiss he's such a freak, you know. He's entertaining, so at least might be entertained.
Yeah, but I just wonder who he's, and just think about what fun it's going to be to watch him needle the Pac-10. Because, you know, he doesn't have the availability for that, you just wait till we beat Florida and sing Rocky Top all night long.
Well,
no,
yeah,
I mean.
Who is he going to needle? I mean, that Boris from Stanford, I mean, it's not very exciting, but who knows?
You know, he's going to needle the guy at Oregon? You know, what?
I just can't believe he did that to Tennessee, though. God damn.
Yeah, it's Well, it's just a darn shame to see it happen to an institution like Tennessee, because it's a, you know, it's a storied, you know, it's a storied program, and
well,
to see the money doing what it's doing to these programs is just sickening.
Well, no, the problem with that, really, seriously, it makes that job look like a stepping stone. I mean, it really worked so badly for Tennessee.
And every bit of it lands on the doorstep of their athletic director. You know, the guy who was brought in to get rid of Fulmer.
Well, see, that's the whole problem. It's like they have to get rid of that guy. I'm just saying, you know, that was their first mistake.
Well, you know, this guy's head may roll. His name's Hamilton. His head may roll, and he may be replaced as AD by Philip Fulmer.
Oh boy. Oh,
and yeah. David adding, by the way, no, Chris Dodd has not wavered. He collapsed, caved in on consumer protection to get a few support watered down health care. Done cloakroom deal. Don't watch the sausage grinder, says David, and adds, Kiffin will lose his ass when he tries to screw Neuheisel at UCLA. Wait and see.
Oh, shit. Yeah, okay, that's true. I forgot about Neuheisel. Yeah, he's a bit entertaining.
And, you know, Rick Neuheisel's got a little something to work with in terms of a grudge and bulletin board material and stuff from the UCLA-USC game.
Yeah, that's true.
Welcome
well,
to the...
You know, because I'm from California, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I absolutely hate USC. So all this is hilarious. There are problems with the NCAA, all that.
I get the emails from Marty referring to it by its classic name, the University of Spoiled Children.
Yeah, you know, it's like I'm a Cal, you know, I'm a Cal fan if I do get into that. So I hate Stanford, you know, because it's, you know, more rich pricks. So, yeah, it's like UC versus them other schools.
Well, Sandra, you have a great night and a wonderful weekend. We'll talk soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now. Oh, and let's keep going here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. I asked before, I want you to indulge me. This is regarding the situation in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we, because I wasn't around for the very early part of the show, I came in the middle with the discussion with you and Fonda talking about football. So, did you cover anything about Haiti?
I touched on it ever so briefly. I've got some more stuff later in the program, but go ahead. That's fine. I mean, you know, we discussed it at rather some length last night, so, you know, it's cool.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, correction, it was patients that figured out a way to convert a gas car into biodiesel using sugarcane, using rum, basically.
The Haitians did that, yeah, and well, I was just, the Cubans did it with kerosene, so, yeah. That's why those 55 Chevys are still on the road.
Oh, yeah. But this is a reading from something I've been working on about the Haitian people. And if you would indulge me, I think it's very relevant, you know, to what the show is. It's about 4 or 5 pages, so.
That might be a bit much, but have a go at it. If I have to jump in, I will.
Okay, yeah, feel free to cut in, okay?
Yeah.
Since the time of Columbus, the Caribbean has been responsible for the rise of at least 5, maybe 6 empires, if you were to count the former Soviet Union. Whether it's been political, economic, religious, or military, no other region on the planet has experienced such a massive transference of wealth outside of its base than that of the Caribbean. Reason being, we are wealthy enough to buy their goods, but politically, economically, and militarily weak enough not to demand a fair price for our goods for export. Hence, they dictate the prices and the terms of trade. No other region has been a dumping ground for imported goods than the Caribbean. It is my personal belief what is most tragic about the Caribbean is the transference of human capital out of the region that has existed for over 500 years, starting with the Arawak, Taino, and Carib people who were brought to various courts of Europe as imported household help. We Caribbeans, regardless of the achievements and contributions to the various empires we have served, have often been looked upon as imported household help. If you don't believe me, just look at the way they treated the newly appointed Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor. I often look into my family, which many had to leave their homeland in order to, quote, better themselves and create opportunities for loved ones. My grandfather spent much of his working life in the industrial cities of northern England in order to provide a decent life for my grandmother, my mom, my aunts, my uncles in Jamaica. Being a banana planter, you're subject to the global marketplace, and natural conditions such as drought and famine, when such factors occurred, heads of households simply worked abroad in order to keep their farms. I often thought about the challenges and strains this puts on a marriage, and I know from personal experience, I guess my grandparents had a very strong partnership. It's the same that debt equals slavery. The great tragedy of the Caribbean and the Third World War together is that once we obtained political power, we went deeper into economic slavery. The Caribbean, like much of the Third World, has suffered from one failed economic policy after another. One has to ask himself how the region, the Caribbean, so rich in natural resources, can have so much poverty. One also has to ask the parallel question, how can a region, primarily Europe, be so limited in natural resources and be so wealthy? The answer is economic serfdom and economic racism. In 1492, Columbus landed in the New World. The seeds of modern-day capitalism began to be sown. From the start, economic bigotry made its way into the early days of New World settlement, where Native Americans were put to work in a manner that was subservient to Europeans. As a result of extreme harsh working conditions, disease, and downright brutality, many of the Native Americans died off in massive numbers quickly. In order to replace the diminished Native American population, many European colonial authorities started shipping their convicts and displaced serfs to the New World. This would especially hold true for the Celtic people. The Celts, having a long tradition of serving in various European armies as mercenaries, often faced the risk of lifelong indentured servitude on the plantations of the Americans if captured. In spite of this practice, it is still not enough to fill the demand for labor in the New World. In the year 1502, the first African slaves were brought to the island of Hispaniola, which is now called Haiti in the Dominican Republic, to replace the nearly wiped out Native American population on that island. Like the Native Americans and poor whites, the African will also be pulled into a capitalist system in a subservient position. The first two centuries of the plantation economy did offer a certain level of upward mobility for all. Indentured servants and slaves either purchased their freedom and began to farm their own lands or moved up with the ranks of the plantation system by becoming an overseer or learn a skill such as blacksmithing. As European settlements expanded in the Americas, more Native Americans began to disappear, and due to greater demand for physical labor, that small window of social mobility, particularly for Africans, began to disappear. European labor will continue to enjoy the opportunity of being able to rise up the socioeconomic ladder in the New World. I'm catching my breath, Bob. By the end of the 17th century, the social order in much of the New World solidified. For Europeans, regardless of economic status on top, Africans on the bottom, Native Americans not even being in the equation. Mixed-race people, their station life could vary from being on the upper tiers of the social economic order to the very bottom. However, most would be somewhere in the lower middle class. No other place would exemplify this social order more than the island of Hispaniola. In order to really grasp the sociological ramifications of the Western Hemisphere, one has to study the history of the island of Hispaniola, which is now called Haiti and the Dominican Republic. The island of Hispaniola is ground zero for the sociological issues that people of color have faced for the past five centuries. This island was such a highly prized possession, the kingdoms of France and Spain, in order to prevent them from going to war over it, decided to split the island in two. When Great Britain decided to expand its empire into the Caribbean, they tried to invade the island of Hispaniola, and it was a total disaster. So they conquered Jamaica instead, which was the Spanish colony for the first 150 years of its post-Columbian history. Once known as St. Dominique on the French-controlled portion, the island and Santo Domingo on the Spanish-controlled portion of the island at the time, the French colony of St. Dominique exemplified the aforementioned institutionalized racism in its purest form. The racial castes in St. Dominique during the 18th century had a very complex structure of Grand Blancs, very wealthy whites, petite blancs, poor whites, free blacks and slaves. St. Dominique also established names for its mulatto and mixed race class, such as Octoon, Cajun, so on and so forth. During the middle of the 18th century, Haiti, along with Jamaica, produced almost 75% of the world's sugar. This high production rate involved the harsh brutality of slave population on both islands. Another factor being responsible for much of the global supply of sugar is because both Britain and France had the naval power to ensure they would export almost 75% of the world's sugar. Keep in mind, Brazil, Cuba, Santo Domingo also produces much sugar. However, the naval strength of both colonies were never matched for that of Britain and France. Many historians agree that had not Haiti been the first black republic, it would have most likely been in Jamaica. Both were under the constant threat of slave revolt. The plantocracy of Jamaica basically bought off much of its renegade African population known as Maroons. This relationship was established when the British signed a formal treaty with the Maroons, granting them political autonomy on March 1st, 1738. Got to catch my breath and get a drink of water here.
That's okay. You've said a mouthful already.
Okay, thanks.
Go right ahead.
Throughout the 18th century until the early 19th century, Great Britain and France engaged in a series of wars for global domination. Many historians may say this was technically the real First World War. By 1791, Haiti was a tinderbox of human violence just waiting to explode. Heavily influenced by the French Revolution and its spiritual doctrine, the rights of man, what was thought as being a typical slave revolt snowballed into what can be described as the black theater of the French and American revolutions. The first issue it brings up is the rights of humanity on a broader scale. In the language of the 18th century, the term human or man had a very narrow definition. That definition applied to European males with a certain level of financial need. So when Thomas Jefferson wrote in the American Declaration of Independence, "All men are created equal," it was based on the mindset of the day, which was all white, financially well-off males are created equal. The second issue it brings up is the need to power share as much as possible, even in times of crisis. All too often, those who study history present historically notable individuals, such a Moses-like figure that come out of nowhere and go out and set things right. Even though this makes wonderful material for books and films, it's not the reality. This Moses-like figure in power too long with too much power can easily become a despot themselves. If you look at the early stages of the Haitian Revolution, there was no real leading man, but an ensemble cast of characters who were all very capable leaders, such as Jean-Jacques Dessalines, Toussaint Louverture, and Alexandre Pétain. Haiti during this time was an island citadel. Almost every major power in Europe took a break from their world war and Napoleonic Wars in order to assist in subduing this revolution. Every army that went into Haiti was destroyed. This was owed in great part to the competent political and military leadership of Dessalines, Louverture, and Pétain. It also be noted that almost every republic in Latin America owed their independence to Haiti. Simón de Bolívar, while in exile, led the Army of Haitians to venture into South America to fight for independence, many of the nation's independence. This historical fact will be a major influence in the Cuban revolutionary leadership, assisting oppressed people on a global level while still fighting for your own self-determination. How does a country with so much potential in its beginning end up being the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere? My theory is speech warfare. After gaining independence, Haiti was cut off economically from the world. The main proponent of this economic isolation, ironically enough, the United States. The United States feared the Haitian Revolution would lead to slave uprisings and destroy much of the commercial interest in the South. Haiti would be the first country to experience what is known as neocolonialism, which is, in theory, you do not necessarily have to plant your flag in a country in order to run the country. How is this done? It was done by what I like to call the DICE method of submission. Divide. D meaning divide. Haiti covers the eastern third of the island, Hispaniola. At one point in their post-revolutionary history, Haiti took over the entire island. This is viewed as a symbolic and political threat to the interests of Europe and the United States at the time. Even though no outside force is able to influence Haitian leadership, their alliance consisting of Africans and mulattoes was a fragile one. This would be key when the United States offered refuge to many of the island's French and Spanish-leaning mulattoes in the newly acquired former French territory of Louisiana, where most of them concentrated in New Orleans. Automatically, this act would cause deep scars in the African diaspora in the New World. Haiti would be politically and economically isolated, which is what the letter I stands for in this equation. Once an island divided in two, with the European-leaning dominated government of the Dominican Republic set in place, Haiti would fall deeper into economic turmoil and political unrest. So France would demand compensation for the next half century for all revenues lost as a result of the lucrative sugar trade. The next letter is C, which is to conquer. By the middle of the 19th century, Haiti was politically weak and in economic turmoil. This would lead to the installation of a mulatto political and economic elite, which would serve in the political and economic interests of Europe and North America. The later of this equation would be E, which is exploit. By the 1850s, the island of Hispaniola ripped in two parts. That generation of competent revolutionary political leadership dead, in jail, exiled, or discredited, Haiti will be on the global open marketplace, on the global open market. During the middle of the 19th century, European and Middle Eastern immigrants would see Haiti as a land of opportunity. Thousands of Germans, Eastern European, and Middle Eastern immigrants will buy out large tracts of land and form businesses with established mulatto elite acting as middlemen. This would form an economic and political alliance that's still in existence today. Haiti represents the beginning of neocolonialism in its most pure form. The economic and political scars of Haiti went deep, not only for the Haitian people, but for people of color globally. To understand Haiti is to understand the plight of African people and people of color in the Americas. This practice will replicate itself throughout the entire third world in one form or the other, and in many predominantly black and brown areas in the United States. If you don't believe me, just walk into any business in a predominantly black or brown area of the United States and look who owns and operates the businesses. Look who makes up the professional and skill classes in these neighborhoods. This setup was not designed by accident. I know at times I've been accused of being a conspiracy theorist, but you have to ask yourself, why did the Bush 2 administration and its allies, in the middle of the night, send the force to kidnap democratically elected President Jean Bertrand Aristide and plant him in the middle of the Central African Republic, a country where torture is practiced on a regular basis? What is it about Haiti, an impoverished, politically and militarily weak country, that makes the United States and its allies want to perform such extreme covert measures? Even though the official reason was he turned the island into a dictatorship. As American history has well proven, on many occasions, the U.S. doesn't have a problem with brutal authoritarian dictators here and abroad. So it must be some other reason besides the one given. What is Haiti today? A political and economic wasteland. It's one of the highest illiterate rates on the planet. This once biodiverse paradise is slowly becoming a desert. Last, much of its intellectual and skilled classes its human capital are living in exile in other countries as second class citizens. Much of humanity's future can clearly be seen in Haiti as a result of extreme deregulated greed and capitalism and media disinformation. Haiti is the true predictor of America's future. If the false Reaganomics gospel of less government and business completes itself, continues to flourish and be accepted as economic policy. The United States needs quick, immediate political, social, education, and most of all, economic reform. If the United States truly wants to be that global powerhouse that its entertainment and information industries portrays it to be. Okay, I'm done.
That is a lot of information to process, Kevin, and you've done a magnificent job pulling it all together. For those who didn't get all of it or tuned in late or whatever, let me offer you this. If you would like, you can email that to me. Do you have it in email? Computer formatted form?
Yeah, I do.
Email that to me. And I will, in turn, transfer it for posting on the Horn blog.
I will.
That way folks can not only look at, have it physically before them, but they can examine it point by point and then comment on it. Because, frankly, I don't know how we discuss it further, because I don't know where to begin. You've got it. You've to the extent you can nutshell it, you've nutshelled it. But the nut is the size of this room, and what I think you get on top of is the fact that the disaster happened in Haiti before the earthquake struck.
Yeah.
The earthquake is just a calling card, if you will, and I'm not trying to be callous by it, and I hope no one thinks that I am. Haiti has been a horror of our own making, as you note, for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that now we suddenly seem to note that they exist, and that the issue you raise with George W. Bush and what was done down there with Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the action was sickening to begin with. But the fact of the matter is, what it was, plain and simple, was making Haiti safe for predatory anarcho-Randianism, otherwise known as capitalism or the free market. Because there's nothing, there's nothing free about the people who were slaving for the market in Haiti. What's the unemployment rate there? On the best of days, 80%. Yeah. And if it's that, it's actually higher because the numbers are never quite square.
Yeah.
So let me offer, if that's okay, let me offer you that, and I imagine folks will have more to add to it as we go through the conversation. I really appreciate it, Kevin.
Thank you.
Because it needs.
I really appreciate the time you gave me. I really do.
Well, it wasn't giving. It's a matter of that's what the Horn exists for, is the dissemination of vital information, and you have certainly done that. So. Get that file to me, and I will see to it that it gets up on the Horn not long after the show's end tonight, I hope.
Okay, I will. I'm definitely going to do that now, and I'm going to continue listening. Okay, brother?
All right. Thanks, Kevin. I really appreciate it, and you have a great weekend, okay?
Okay. Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye. Later, Kevin. Bye now. That was amazing. And the only shortcoming of radio with regard to long-form information that extends past the idea of conversation is the fact that it's difficult to pull the information in and make it approachable outside of it standing as it is. So it will go up on the website at headonradionetwork.com. And I encourage you to look at the work that Kevin has done and to offer your thoughts. This is the beauty of the internet. This is a full-on multimedia experience sans video, because you don't need to see my ugly mug on the computer screen. It might burn the daggum monitor out. As it stands, we have not taken a break thus far on this Front Porch Friday. It's about 19 minutes past the hour. And we're gonna take a professional broadcasting. Sheesh. We're going to take a break now. I mean, geez, if Rush Limbaugh can belch and do what he does on the air, I can stumble over my own tonsils once in a while, or what used to be tonsils. But anyway, we'll take a little break, and I want to send out a happy birthday wish and a dedication. Sophie, who is frequently in the chat room and is a longtime listener, is celebrating her birthday today. And so by way of that, she has a favorite song, and we will play that favorite song right now, as a matter of fact. Coming up after the tune, we will go to the Green News Report that I forgot to play last night, because I apologize to Brad and Desi. I just got all wrapped up in what I was doing. It happens around here because I don't have anybody throwing things at me. But we will go to that, and then we'll come back at about the bottom of the hour with your calls. And we've got a lot of numbers lit up right now. You're welcome to chime in at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is, in fact, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Happy birthday, Sophie.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, January 14, 2010.
We need more people down here! We need more people down here!
Epic humanitarian crisis in Haiti. More toxic Chinese toys and even toxic house dust. Rolling Stone names the planet killers, plus...
When I first looked at it, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. What, to me, looks a lot like a moonscape.
The pervasive pollution of mountaintop removal mining.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and even snarky comment. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by VelvetRevolution.us. It's now officially another big election year, and VR is continuing the years-long fight against failed and faulty electronic voting systems. Fight the fight along with VR. We need your help by signing on to the Diebold ReturnOurMoney.com campaign. It's free, and your voice does make a difference. Please sign on at DieboldReturnOurMoney.com. It'll take you 30 seconds, and you will join the fight for free, fair, accurate, and transparent elections in 2010. Okay, Desi, once again, we're looking at a humanitarian crisis here from a natural disaster of epic proportions in Haiti.
Yes, epic is the right word.
Too many people died. We need international help.
The 7.0 earthquake that destroyed Haiti's capital on Tuesday afternoon was only the beginning of the disaster. The death toll is estimated to run into the tens of thousands. The aftermath has become a full-blown humanitarian crisis with untold numbers left homeless amid the rubble and the looming threat of disease. Haiti, already the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, never recovered from four hurricanes and tropical storms in 4 weeks that hit the island back in 2008. You can help.
The easiest way, and one that I did, took me about 30 seconds, was to text the word Haiti, that's H-A-I-T-I, to 90999 on my cell phone. $10 will be charged to your cell phone bill. It's quick, it's easy, and yes, it does help. That's texting the word Haiti, H-A-I-T-I, to 90999. It'll take you just a second. It'll cost you only $10.
Okay, on to other green news this week. Remember the public outcry when lead was found in children's toys and jewelry made in China? Congress passed a specific ban against lead in children's products, so Chinese manufacturers responded by replacing the lead with cadmium.
What?
Cadmium is a toxic heavy metal that hinders brain development in children and is known to cause cancer. Recent testing by the Associated Press found high levels of cadmium in children's jewelry being sold in major chain stores across the country. On Wednesday, the head of the Consumer Product Safety Commission warned parents to take away all cheap metal jewelry from their children.
Wow.
New York Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer just proposed legislation to ban cadmium in children's products. A new study shows that toxic chemicals used to seal pavement, parking lots, and driveways across the country are showing up at alarming levels in dust in American homes across the country. We've also reported before on BPA, a chemical used in most plastics. It's a known endocrine disruptor, and studies have shown it leaches into food and liquids from containers. Well, now a new study this week links BPA to significantly higher risks of cardiovascular disease. Recent studies have found BPA in the urine of 93% of Americans. This week's Rolling Stone goes deep inside the battle over global warming, and its cover pulls no punches. In huge red letters, it says, "You idiots, meet the planet's worst enemies."
We saw that cover and thought, well,
well, that's not really the cover. We saw a graphic of it, and it just says nothing more but, you idiots.
Yes, it profiles 17 polluters and deniers who are derailing efforts to curb climate catastrophe. Some folks on the list are super investor Warren Buffett and owner of Fox News, Rupert Murdoch.
You idiots.
Check out the full list at RollingStone.com, along with an excellent article on the big money that's behind the climate change deniers. Finally, a follow-up on a story we reported earlier this week on a devastating new study that slams the destructive coal mining technique of mountaintop removal. Mountaintop removal is just that, literally blowing off the top of mountains to get at the coal inside, dumping the debris into streams and valleys below, permanently destroying them, and contaminating drinking water supplies downstream. This blockbuster study is the first ever comprehensive look at the various impacts of mountaintop removal and valley fills on both the ecosystem and human health, which the scientists say are, quote, pervasive and irreversible and will cause persistent pollution for centuries to come. In a recent interview with Bob Kincaid from our Green News Report affiliate, the Head On Radio Network in West Virginia, Margaret Palmer of the University of Maryland, the lead author of the study, explained why they called on the EPA to halt all mountaintop removal mining permits immediately.
The evidence was so overwhelming that we took the unusual step of making a policy recommendation.
The scientists also slammed the failure to enforce environmental regulations, citing in just one instance one mine in West Virginia that had over 600 violations of the Clean Water Act in 3 years, but no action was taken by the state or the EPA. When asked what residents who live near such mining sites could do to protect themselves, public health expert Dr. Michael Hendricks of the University of West Virginia told Kincaid,
if you can, consider moving away.
The study puts the Obama administration in the hot seat at a time when the EPA just last week approved a new permit for mountaintop removal in West Virginia.
Bob Kincaid and Head On Radio Network have been doing a terrific job on this beat. It's important to get this story out because we are talking about blowing off the tops of mountains that can never be restored and the toxic aftermath that comes from it. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Follow us on Twitter. Download us on iTunes. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well,
we know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
About 25 minutes before the hour, thanks so much to Brad and Desi for the kind words. And thanks very much to them for making mountaintop removal such a recurring and highly profiled part of their Green News reports. They're doing magnificent work. Of course, I've known Brad Friedman for a lot of years now, and he's a pro. He's a pro. That's why you get to hear him when Malloy goes out of town. Mike knows that the seat will be safe in Brad's comfortable hands. Capable hands. The seat will be... Brad will be comfortable in the seat because of his capable hands. See, it's the hands thing. It's that godforsaken Scott Brown photo in Cosmo. And the little hand and what... Sandra sits probably under it and... Oh! But yeah, I was doing a little reading during the break as well. And the race in Massachusetts is, if you did not know, it's a dead heat. It is a dead heat. with all the momentum in Scott Brown's corner, and Ms. Coakley running a campaign that could be said to have been, at best, inept. Yeesh. Let's go back to the phones and see what's going on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Kate, what's up?
Hanging out on the front porch.
Yeah, you know, it's not so cold tonight.
No, it isn't. I miss the front porch. I wish you'd get your gear squared away and we could have, then you could have the night off, huh?
Yeah, just put the nickel in and walk away.
That's right.
Yeah, at this point, I don't think anything makes anything better except an entirely new unit. I mean, we can try it sometime, but what it boils down to is this unit was built for landlines. And when we transitioned over away from the rapacious bill that we got from the fine folks at Verizon and went to CityNet, who has done such a magnificent job over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Then, basically we're asking this phone processor unit to do a job it wasn't designed to do. And that coupled with the fact that there are so many different forms of telephony now, I don't know if I had somebody who was full time behind the board and I was just over in another chair running my mouth, it might be different, but we're talking about the need to, EQ every individual phone call on the fly.
EQ, what does that mean?
Equalize.
Oh, excuse me. Anyway, and you said everything was just fine, and you said it was January 15th, 09.
Well, see, that's why I think it's fine. I don't have January 2000. It's still coming at me. I haven't seen all the misery of 09 yet.
And that election coming that you and Wayne started talking about, and it's not, you're right, the end is getting nearer and nearer and nearer. And, God. I wanted to, we need to maybe do a hard edit here. Now I'm for something different, Bob. David, when he was running down the list of check, he forgot the eyelashes.
Well, they don't all have the eyelashes.
Oh, they don't? Well, I don't have TV. The only ones I know are...
Yeah, see, you're in Tammy Faye world.
Oh, see, I'm old. Okay. Excuse me, David.
You know, Rexella Van Impey is, I think, entirely some sort of CGI computer construct that sits next to Jack Van Impey.
Oh, he is so creepy. Oh, my God. Ooh.
Rexella? I mean, honest to God, when your feet hit the floor in the morning, wouldn't it have been... I'm going to the courthouse for the name change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Van Impey's bad enough.
God, he is so scary looking.
I mean, isn't an Impey a servant of the devil?
He looks like it, doesn't he? Ooh. Anyway, enough of him. And also, you know, with the democracy, you know, this isn't democratic. This isn't. Wasn't it de Tocqueville who came over here way back in the day and said, this democracy, didn't he say it wouldn't work? Or he didn't see how it would work?
No, I thought de Tocqueville commented favorably on the potential for it. Maybe I just read it sideways.
No, you're probably right. But democracy is so messy, and we just mostly can't handle it. So we just
well, no, it's not just that. It's if you want to be really, 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 really candid about it, this was never designed to be a democracy. That's why the Senate exists. If you wanted a pure representative democracy, you'd have a single representative house, modeled more or less on the British parliamentary system.
Mm-hmm.
With direct elections, and you'd have something approaching democracy. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing was put together as an effort to get the nation up and running, and then to make sure that nobody got uppity.
Yeah.
Because while the House of Representatives was arguably directly elected, the people doing the direct elections were white male property owners.
Yes, sir. What's new?
And you know, that was taken off of the Greek model. Remember, everybody was in the democracy at Athens as long as you're willing to call everybody male Greek property owners.
Mm-hmm.
There were more slaves in Athens than there were freemen,
mm-hmm.
and there were as many women. And all of those people were out in the cold, and yet they called it democracy. Because the people participating in it were the only ones who mattered.
Yep, that's right. That's the way it should be, huh? Still that way.
And as a function of that, you know, you can make an argument that, and see the other side of it, and Dr. Bill would be so much better for this than me. I'm really, really out of my depth. But the other thing is that the Senate was conceived, you know, if you think about it, you know, George Washington was the president of the Constitutional Convention, and he said, you see, we shall take the flaming passions of the House of Representatives and cool it in the saucer of the Senate, and he poured hot coffee or hot tea from his cup into the saucer, and, you know, made his point. And the whole idea there is that we're not going to let this democracy thing catch on too much. So making the House of Representatives population-based in terms of the number of representatives, and then making the Senate strictly, you know, two senators from every state, no matter the population, ensures that, basically it was done to a certain extent as an ameliorative thrown to the southern slave states, because even with the drafting of the Declaration of Independence, they were having problems with slavery. And what was his name? Rutledge, maybe, from South Carolina, it had to be a unanimous declaration, and he was not going to sign on as long as there was any of that uppity talk about freeing no slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and nobody was... Women? Please. I mean, at least they talked about slavery. Women didn't even merit a discussion. Hey, honey, get me another glass of wine. Because you got to remember that most of the guys who framed the Constitution, and they were guys, were drinking anywhere from a gallon to a gallon and a half to 2.5 gallons of wine a day, because, you know, that water will kill you.
I was going to say, because the water was so bad. By the way, Kevin, that was an excellent job. Excellent job. I enjoyed that. And I hope I didn't get all of it, because I've got a really crappy phone, and so I would hope that when you get it up on the web page that people will go and read it, because it was an excellent job. God, I was in so impressed. A lot of work there, brother man. A lot of work. And I wanted to elaborate a little bit on that email I sent last night about the cruise ships. You know, this is the hard break time, the hard edit time.
Oh, okay.
Today I went into the office where I used to work and talked to people about what the cruise ship, because I thought, well, maybe I just had one example of a bad day on the cruise ship with a client of mine, or a survivor who I was working with, and he had been taken out of his backyard. He'd been living in the tent behind his rental, rent-to-own, and it got damaged bad enough that he couldn't go inside. And they pitched a tent in the backyard, he and his two boys, and he was differently able. Like, he wasn't in a wheelchair yet, but he was on canes and pretty sick with diabetes. And I don't really, not clear how he got coerced into getting onto the cruise ship, but he wanted to stay in the yard. But anyway, he went. Maybe it was for the boys or something. And he told me that they put him on the cruise company that came in was one of the biggies, whatever, and they sent in one of their largest or one of their smallest ships, and somebody said they thought that maybe it only held 600 people. She said, I don't quote me, but it wasn't one of the humongous ones. But they started putting people on it, and the ship was docked on the Pascagoula River right at the bridge at 90, on 90, and they'd get people out there just any way they could at first, and then later on when the recovery people had vehicles, they could take them out that way and in the recovery vehicle. And and I checked this out with two or three people they were first responders. The conditions on the ship were akin to to call it the Dome in New Orleans.
The Superdome?
There
yeah.
was. They were crowded. It was, they had, well, they had all the utilities hooked up, but the sewers backed up and the place got dirty and filthy and people were fighting and there was a lot of domestic violence. There was some rapes. There was a lot of fighting among strangers, you know, physical fights, and the conditions just got horrendous. The cruise company did feed the people who were living, and the ship was jam-packed. And they did feed them, and one person said, the food was horrible, and another one said, oh, the food was really good. So, you know, that depends on who you're talking to in that case. But
well, let me back up just a minute on the issue of cruise ships real quick. You couldn't make me get on one of those, disaster or no disaster, because remember, that's where you go to get sick with viruses that they can't kill. Because they've spent so much time using antibacterials and cleaning agents that everything that can live on those boats has evolved. Yeah, I know it's tough on the right wingers, but yeah, it's evolved way past our ability to kill them.
So the ship. Somebody, more than one person, told me that the ship, after they cleaned it out and got everybody. FEMA took care of everybody, got them put somewhere else. They decommissioned the ship and took it to Mobile and completely refurbished it. And it had to be torn, gutted, just like a FEMA house, just like a flood damaged house. It had to be completely refurbished. So anyway, the issue of the sentiment, I understand, and people need to. You know, to come up with solutions, but that one had gross unintended consequences. And so the first responder disaster response people didn't get it right that time. I mean, another issue was that my friend Robert said when they could get off of the ship. They weren't contained there. I mean, it wasn't a detention place for sure, but he said he'd ask and ask and ask, and people didn't know anything, but the records got lost, and people didn't know they could get off and go home or go whatever. They just were stuck there, they thought. And he said after 2 weeks, he kept asking around, and he said whoever the recovery people were that put him on that ship with the kids didn't even know he was there. And so he totally got lost, not only the paperwork, but he totally physically got lost in the system. They didn't even know he's, and one of the women, one of the workers I talked to, they said that happened over and over and over again. So, somebody at lunch today said, well, when they bury people, it was noted that there was a grave, 7,000 people. And she said, well, did they take DNA? And I said, well, no. And what would they do with it anyway? Well, just file it. And I said, where? She did not understand the infrastructure. She did not understand the totality of the disaster there. I mean, I'm just...
And you know, the same thing, of course, applies to what we're talking about in Haiti, Kate. I've got stories here in front of me.
That's what I'm talking about.
That are just bone-shatteringly, just conscience-bending in the enormity of the grotesquerie. Just this from the UK, of course, you know, better news. Even though this comes from the Telegraph, it may be less suspect.
Less better, but better than Fox.
Saul Schwartz, a photographer for Time magazine, said he has seen at least two downtown roadblocks in Port-au-Prince formed with bodies of earthquake victims and rocks. Now, and he said they are starting to block the roads with bodies. It's getting ugly out there. People are fed up with getting no help.
I heard another... aside that they were stacking bodies at the airport too, but then nobody could substantiate that, or the story dropped off of the radar or something. So, I quit watching about 24 hours ago. I mean, this disaster porn just gets me crazy. I can't.
Well, there's a new phrase for the show. Disaster porn.
I just can't understand how they could have like Tuesday night. They were filming. Somebody was filming at night. And so if they can get media crews in there with their freaking generators to have lights to film the talking heads, why can't they put, they find a doctor who's needing to amputate and needs electricity. Why can't, and the whole Gulf Coast is just, oh, WLOX and all these people down here are just so excited that Robin Roberts is there and she found the baby that the mother had adopted and they couldn't find the baby. And they're so excited that Robin's there. I said, did she take water? Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, Robin goes everywhere to those, but, oh, God. She's from Pascagoucian, and she made a big splash, during Katrina on the Good Morning America or something. I don't know anything
about it. Yeah, she started out at ESPN, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, well, anyway, I just wanted to kind of set the record straight that it's a nice idea, but it didn't work, and it didn't work for Katrina relief, and it would be even more horrific down there. I'm not even going to go into why, but
maybe as a staging area for relief, but certainly not as a.
Well, for sure. See, you know, somebody mentioned the an op center, floating op center. That would work, but and I think.
And you know, there's another wrinkle in the story developing. Amy Goodman had it today over at Democracy Now! In South Africa, speaking from his exile in South Africa, Jean-Bertrand Aristide says he wants to come back to Haiti, in his words, to help rebuild the country, moving from misery to poverty with dignity. Moving from misery to poverty with dignity.
Yeah.
And the question is, why shouldn't he?
Yeah.
Why not revisit the issue of why we backed that coup against a democratically elected leader?
Mhm. Yeah, I got some good lessons on that. I'm pretty sad over all this because I had a young gal over in New Orleans at the volunteer center. She came in and worked for a week, and she was finishing up her college. I don't even remember when I was there. What year is this? You said it's 09. I'll take that as a. Anyway, she was finishing up her college and was going to go back home to Haiti and work with children and education. And I know she's probably dead, so it's pretty sad. I'm feeling some grief tonight, some personal grief tonight. But I mean, ever since it happened, and so I just wanted to tell people that the disaster, the whole issue of disaster relief is so complicated because it's caught up in bureaucracy. It's just, you know, they can't. Malloy mentioned last night, I said, damn, we did an airlift into Berlin for months and months and months and months. Why can't we get water to Haiti?
Yeah.
Good question.
Well, but then again, the Berlin airlift took place at a time when the American people were fairly confident of the ability of their government being an extension of themselves to get the daggum job done.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a right-wing effort that has taken place over the course of decades now, Kate, to convince the American people that the American nation is hopeless and inept.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time that they clothe it all in we can blow up anything patriotism.
Yeah. And now we need to put some Marines down there and take over. Take charge.
Yeah.
It's already blowed up. And if we went in with barges and completely hauled off the city and the bodies like we did with Twin Towers, just haul off everything and build it all over again, they'd still be in the same place. There's no the population who's left, the gangs are just running rampant. I mean, they're just taking over again, and there's no government, and there's no infrastructure.
Right. It's exact. It is the. Pardon me. I'm not trying to be over. It is the absolute wet dream of Friedman-esque free market, anarcho-Randian so-called capitalists. That is what they want. That is the world that they want. And as I said last night, Kate, we don't have anybody on our side who will stand up and say to their faces, "You rotten bastards, don't. This is your dream. Just admit it. This is where you want to take us all." Because you know what? There are some well-to-do in Port-au-Prince.
Oh yeah.
And they're not in this.
No, they're not in this conversation. So, well, I want to move on to let somebody else talk. I think the fishing boats are eating my connection tonight because I stay on for a while and it goes on roaming and then it hangs up and then it goes, it's just getting me crazy, like, makes me want to throw my dress up over my head, run around the room screaming. I don't have a connection tonight, so and on a lighter note, not necessarily, well, I guess I've been root because I sat in Chili's today because that's where the crew went to lunch, and then some other place the day before, a big screen where they have big screen, and I happened to be sitting facing the screens, and all this thing with OT and the Big Orange and Baby Lane and all that stuff. I've been so ruined because I understood everything they were talking about and everything they were saying, and I understood the backstories. I mean, I said, I can't believe I'm sitting here watching this. I am so ruined. Anyway, ruined. So,
run, run. You're right.
Anyway.
I know.
Anyway.
But look, you know, SEC football is, again, it's the best soap opera this country, one of the best sporting soap operas that this country has to offer.
Certainly evangelical religion down here. Yeah. Then when you mix the Bible and the playbooks, and you get really crazy folks.
Well, what's that movie? And you're the wrong person to ask. No offense.
I'm very wrong person.
But there's a movie out there that's done a whole bunch of box office about a young man who plays in the NFL now. He's a lineman. He was taken in by an evangelical couple, and they raised him up, and he became and it's doing huge box office. And the reason it's doing huge box office, Kate, is because the movie company hired a PR firm that had direct links into the evangelical preaching community, and they sent out 22,000 press kits on this movie to 22,000 mega churches in this country, and you got preachers in the pulpit preaching, literally preaching mega church version of prosperity gospel Christianity out of scenes in this movie. There are talking points, just like political or talk radio, or there are talking points about how to relate Christianity to this man's life. Sandra Bullock's in the movie. You know, it's done huge box office.
That's why Rush was kind of on, gave me a good idea last night about tampons in the ears for my bleeding ears. This stuff just, the nauseated stomach, you know, and the bleeding ears and the crossed eyes and the, oh my God. I just want to get back on the road and go be somewhere. Oh, and thanks to Renee Louise for giving a shout out about the sound, what they call it, sound?
Digital voice recorder.
Right. Well, I know that I'm familiar with
that. The website, yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with that, but love that program. And this is a little bit different, and I still haven't gotten it off the ground yet, so it's still kind of in the works. And so, there you go. But anyway, thanks for the compliment. I appreciate that. So anyway, I think I'll go and go be for the rest of the week. Is Martin Luther King a holiday, birthday holiday for you? Are you on Monday?
No, I'm on the air. I mean, I think that's the.
Okay.
I think by talking about his legacy and what he hoped for this country, is the best way to mark his legacy in this country.
Mhm. Mhm. Eager to get over to Highlander where he got his.
Got his teaching.
Yeah.
Well, him and Rosa Parks too.
And
you know, it was only after she was at Highlander that she went back home to Montgomery and said, "I ain't getting up."
Right. She'd been taught peaceful resistance, and so they they were taught that, and folks don't know that. Oh, they thought she's just a little old housekeeper who just said, "I'm so tired, I'm not."
And you know, I was reminded. I was, you know, these things happen within the timing that they happen in, Kate. I guess for a reason. I saw a news story the other day where an Indian concern, run by a man, oddly enough, named Jindal. I guess, you know, one of Piyush Jindal's kinfolks, you know, third cousin twice removed. You know how it is. South India, South Alabama, South Louisiana. So same. But anyway, they've entered a deal with Don Blankenship and Massey Energy to continue raping the Central Appalachians so that India can have coal.
Oh.
And I was struck. Because after all, God is a God of irony. I was struck by the notion, Mr. Jindal, can we talk, buddy? We got a problem. See, you're doing business with Don Blankenship, but you're going to come here into the Central Appalachian coal fields, and you're going to run up against a whole lot of people who are using the tactics of your national icon, Mr. Gandhi. Now, do you really want to play? Do you really want to play in this? Do you really want to play with the God of Irony that hard, Mr. Jindal?
And a whole bunch of them up in the hollers have all got their own sewing machines.
We will make salt, Mr. Jindal. We will make salt.
Speaking of India,
baby, these oil wells, these gas wells around here just charged with brine. We will make salt, Mr. Jindal.
Speaking of India, Walgreens have now sent all of their accounting departments out. You know, the whole corporate has sent their accounting department to India. So if you might want to start boycotting Walgreens because
And speaking of boycotts, let me throw this out there just for anybody. Yes, absolutely. Walgreens. For anybody interested. There are two chains whence one ought not do what one ought not do business nationally. One of them is Wendy's. The other is Applebee's. We have launched a national, or are in the process of launching a national boycott of both of these corporations. Because
well, they had the acid Applebee's back way back in the day.
Right. Well, now it's getting formalized because. They have been spoken to about the idea of getting out of the advocating for mountaintop removal business.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not so much into that. They said, well, we just need to support the local economy. And we try to explain to them, this is not supporting the local economy. And we, you know, we told them, we're not asking you to get on our side. We're just asking you to do business in America and remain neutral in this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and Wendy's too, huh?
Yeah, and so if you're out there and you're thinking you need a bite, you need to do fast food, there are two places you do not want to go, at least in my humble opinion. One of them is Wendy's.
And that's because they're doing the, they've got the signs up support.
Yeah, they're Fockers.
Oh.
Friends of Cole.
What's the young man's name who sat in the line and the Frosty was falling while the guy prayed?
Oh, that was...
Where he and I... What's his name?
That's Vince.
Okay, yeah. Where are Vince and I going to get our Frosties now?
Well, you know what?
Vince?
No, you just got to go somewhere. Hardee's. They make them from real ice cream. It's not made from frozen vegetable oil. There you go.
Okay, Vince, you hearing that? We got to change the venue.
Or if you're out west, not Hardee's, but Carl's Jr.
Ew. Well, okay, if they. Whatever.
They make their milkshakes out of real ice cream.
Well, sometimes I just have to have something sweet going down the road, and that's usually the only thing I do, and I'll quit doing it now. Save myself $1.05 every month or two. Anyway, we have walked all over a whole bunch of my kickers. I mean, I was just going to hang up 10 minutes ago, so I don't have anything to bump myself out with now. We went all over the top of them. So, anyway, just low smoked and southern down here. I'm going to go have some supper and and wait for Malloy to come on. So anyway.
Yeah, maybe get up in the morning and have a grit for breakfast.
We've been eating yogurt and granola, but grits sound really good. I think I'm going to put that in her ear and say, hey, make me some grits, girl.
There you go. You'll be all right.
She knows how to do grits. She's from up there in the Jackson area, up north of Penn.
North of Penn,
okay,
that's right.
Well, I'm moving on here, so y'all have a good night, and thanks for taking the call.
All right, you take care, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now. Back down where she belongs. Back down in the land of grits. That's Kate. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
I shouldn't listen to these conversations while I'm waiting because it makes me think of so many things to say. But the thing about that Kevin read, I don't know, I haven't heard anybody talking about that when Pat Robertson has said what he said.
Mm-hmm.
The ambassador from Haiti, you know, up in Washington, he was very offended about it. And I've never heard that kind of a history before about them, but basically that they have made this our country and a lot of other, Bolivia. And,
yeah, oh, yeah.
You know, and I'm looking forward to reading that. You know, I'm like Kate, I've got a bad telephone connection.
Oh, and by the way, I'm just getting told in the chat room, or not in the chat room, but by email, the movie I was referring to is The Blind Side.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's big and it's hot and it's made millions of dollars and done huge box office, and it is tied in with the fundamentalists like crazy.
Who was in that?
Sandra Bullock is the lead, and they're saying that, you know, she's...
Oh, you're talking about the new movie?
Yeah, then she's done an Oscar
turn. Oh, yeah,
turn,
yeah.
You
know. Oh, okay, that's based on that, about...
Yeah, a young man who becomes a standout lineman.
Previews,
right,
yeah,
right.
I've been seeing the previews on that. But, it's interesting what we don't know, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
About different things. Well, Bob, I got reported again.
Oh, no.
By the county. and I got it this afternoon after 5. In the mail, and I won't know until Monday what they got cooked up on me now.
Oh, Lord of mercy.
But I'm sitting here listening, and I was thinking, you know, about all the trouble in the world and what these people are going through in Jamaica, you know, I don't have it so bad. I would just like to have my home. See, I was, you know, and maybe I'm being selfish. I don't know. But I'm starting to get some of my floors done. You know, we had to take out all the floors. I haven't had any floors for a while except in one room.
Mercy.
And I just wish they'd leave me alone.
Not a lot to ask, but...
But I tried to look up the... I hate to take time to talk about this, but I tried to look up on the... Internet, they used to have a website, but it's basically articles now. I didn't find their website of this association where I live. And it was talking about their big agenda. It was the violations of the Pope, well, I should say, county code in the area. One of the most common violations of the code in the community is distress of abandoned vehicles. On most streets, at least one home will have a violation of this type. And at a number of sites, the violation involves several vehicles. This does not allow for the parking or storage of a distressed vehicle, one that is incapable of being moved under its own power on residential property, unless that vehicle is completely enclosed in a garage or building. One distressed vehicle is permitted to be stored in the back of the property if it is enclosed by a screen and is completely hidden from the view of neighbors. Now, what kind of screen? I mean,
right, yeah.
And you got to have a permit to build a daggum garage. But anyway, and it says the number of code enforcement officers for the area has been reduced because of recent cuts. However, the codes have not been eliminated or changed, and they will be enforced if the violations are reported. Now, I haven't been to one of these meetings in a while, but my neighbors, they went, and they said it's just what they did. They took a lot of money and built a park out here, and it's like a block from a police substation or sheriff's substation. Well, what goes on at night? Drugs, sales,
sure.
All that other stuff. And I think I wrote you in an email about how they did our, you know, I could kind of relate in a small way when we had all that dust here from when they were redoing our drainage. And that was the biggest joke because they just, you know, the culverts that were already here, some were small, some of them were huge. Some of them were just homemade. You know, they were way back, some of them way back yonder. And so everything, and they claim we've got a drainage system out here, and it's a big joke. And, but, par for the course, I mean, the way everything is done. But, I'm going to have to do some tall praying about this. I wonder if I've been wishing things on people.
No. The only thing that's going on is that you occupy a space, Juanita, where people who are paid to supposedly enforce laws and codes can safely say that they are doing so by harassing you because you don't have the wherewithal to harass back.
Yeah. Well, they... See, I told you the other day we live kind of like on the main road out here in this suburb, and so I guess I can see. And they've got a lot next to me that you can't get in touch with the person that's supposed to own it because they pretend they can't understand English. And it's all grown up, and we get rats from out there. Of course, my cats are real good about catching rats. Some of them slip through. And it's got these trees that grow that shouldn't be in a residential area because they're very weak rooted. I don't know if you're familiar with, elephant trees.
Yes.
Or,
yes.
Poinciana, they have a real shallow root. And my neighbors there's one of them is leaning over their yard. And you can't get in touch with these people. And the county's not doing anything about things like that. But anyway, another thing that I read was that first they tried to get children to go out and, you know, clean up the park. Now they're wanting to get prisoners. But we people out here will have to watch the prisoners and make sure they work the proper hours and make sure that they're working. Crazyville, right?
Yeah. Sadly, it is.
And like I said, I hate to complain, but it just kicked me in the gut, you know, when I got that.
Well, it does. I mean, believe you me, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I was just asking you about that the other day. But I'm going to do that break now and learn that from Kate. By the way, I think Kate, I love the way she describes things. She makes you feel like you were there, you know, in her.
Yeah.
I mean, just the voice.
It's a gift.
And she's got a wonderful speaking voice, I think.
Oh, and I'm being asked to ask you, have you ever heard of a writer by the name of Bailey White?
No.
Well, with
what
that in mind,
right?
Well, just if you just go to baileywhite.com, I've got a suggestion that says, Juanita, that says this may be stuff Juanita may very well wind up enjoying reading. A series of books by a great storyteller. Bailey White, BaileyWhite.
And what kind of books does he write?
He's a storyteller. And he's featured a lot on NPR every Thanksgiving. He does a story per year since 1991 mm-hmm. on NPR.
I really enjoyed that one you read about by
Truman Capote.
Yeah.
Yeah, A Christmas Memory.
That was amazing. And that was sad, too. You know, that guy went through a lot, especially in Alabama.
Oh.
And we had a wonderful book.
Well, remember, I mean, if you're familiar with To Kill a Mockingbird,
yeah.
The little boy, Dill Harris, that occupies such a role in that book, that's little Truman Capote. It really, really is.
Oh.
He grew up down in Monroe, Alabama, or Monroeville, Alabama, alongside Harper Lee and her brother, and that character, Dill Harris, is the child who would grow up to become Truman Capote. So,
wow.
Yeah. Well, Juanita, don't torment yourself over the weekend waiting
not,
to find out because
it's just so aggravating. You get those things when you can't do a thing about it. And not knowing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bailey White. And by the way, I messed up. I was just, Bailey White is a 56-year-old woman from Thomasville, Georgia.
Really?
Yeah, not a she.
Oh, Bailey White?
Yeah, White. W-H-I-T-E.
Right?
No, White. W-H-I-T-E.
Oh, I thought you said right.
No, Bailey White. And you can
and
go
she's
to.
She's from Georgia?
Yeah, Thomasville, Georgia, and you can go to her website.
I have family from there.
Well, see, that's why I think it is that David in Tennessee thinks you might find her writing speaking to you.
And I love the song you played. Wasn't that Layla? Or
yeah, that was Layla.
That's a great song. It is
a classic, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, a classic.
But anyway, pray for Haiti.
Absolutely, and take.
You know what? So they've got so much stuff down there, and they can't get it to the people.
No. And look, that is the Haiti of their design. That's the Haiti that America and the rest of the world have created.
That's what like Kevin was talking about. But you know what? I got to say something about Aristide. I saw Clayton Powell. I think it was yesterday. And wasn't he the one that went in and escorted him out?
Colin?
He had no choice.
I do believe you're correct, yes.
Okay. He said, they said something to him about him and Haiti, and was he going to go down there? And he said, well, we all need to do something for that. He didn't really commit himself to doing anything. And he said, I did go down there. You know, we helped Aristide to flee because he knew he had to leave. He needed to leave. The guy wasn't even warned if what we were told is true. And now, were you saying it, or did I see somewhere on TV where Aristide was wanting to come back?
No, I just said that. He's announced that he wants to come home from South Africa.
But remember, you know, he was forced to leave. And who went in to get him?
We did.
Colin Powell.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Exactly.
I just had to say that.
I understand. Juanita, just take it one breath at a time, and Monday will be okay.
Well, I hope so, but God only knows if we get a bunch of and Ray Stevens. Sorry, man.
Isn't that just sickening?
Got their little ivory towers. He ain't no more We the People. We're the We the People. We need to, can't we sue him for taking away our title? We claimed it first. Can we sue him?
Oh, mercy. Juanita, you take care, dear.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, good night.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
From Central Florida, that's Juanita. And we proceed along. Hey, okay, no. Let's try this. Nope. You guys. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Going once. Okay, Dave. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Gonzo, greetings.
Well, hey, Spike, what's up?
Not much, man. Took me a while to call through tonight. I don't know what's going on. The phones are kind of weird. Like, it'll ring three times and then give me the disconnect.
Well, that's because we've been stacked up. I've got lines open now, but we, I guess people gave up and so forth. But yeah, that's why it took a little bit. When all six lines are lit, it'll try and then it'll pop you.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing, I guess, then, at least. I remember the days when you could just call right in, so. The harder it is to get through, that means the more people are listening.
Right, and all we got to do is get a new phone hybrid, and we'll do 12 lines.
But
and then it'll be a six-hour show.
There's so many places where I can begin. But the first thing I want to do, actually, is on Cassie's article over at Mother Jones. I don't know if that's just online or if that's in print also, what she had written. But I loved it. What school sees her and doesn't see someone that should get a free scholarship? I mean, the Ivy Leagues love giving away free scholarships to the best and brightest. I mean, even though you hate them, the best example of that, you know, when he speaks all the time talking about it, is Ralph Nader, a product of the Ivy League. You know, that the best and brightest should go to school for free, regardless of their economic background, just so that these schools can continue to have the best and brightest. I mean, you know, Princeton, like all Ivy League schools, half of their student body is great accomplishment people like Nader, and the other half are the people who got in more because of their connections, like Donald Rumsfeld.
Don't forget, what's his name? George Shultz was a Princeton man because he's got a Princeton Tiger tattooed on his butt. I wish I was kidding. I'm not.
I don't think Dean Cain has one on his. He played Superman at one time. A very skinny Superman, I might add, but still. I certainly would like to see her go to Princeton, although I gotta say I am biased and I would hope that Lafayette wouldn't be fools to let her get by because Lehigh's where the right wingers go and Lafayette's their rivals, so I would hope they would keep with the tradition of being not like Lehigh. And
well, I can't imagine Cassie not just being an absolute lead pipe cinch anywhere she applies.
You know what, though? There is a strong progressive student movement at Lafayette, too. So I think she would fit in very well with a lot of the student body at Lafayette. I mean, like a truly liberal student body. I mean, there's the campus Democrats.
Well, you do know she is absolutely, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here. It's my understanding she's absolutely smitten with Princeton.
Well,
but
it is the allure of the Ivy League. But I'm sitting here, you know, at least once a week, I have a shirt that says Lafayette College on it that I wear. So I got to just admit, I have a slight bias, and you know, I just want to keep floating out there. Lafayette is a good place, though. It's not all right-wingers. But yeah, I really enjoyed that arc. I think that was a great piece. And, I mean, Jesus, I'm 30 years old, and I can't get printed in a major publication yet. So that's very impressive.
Well, and she, and I can tell you just from having been on a little bit of the background, she worked like crazy on that thing. And it put in sweat like, I mean, just really did the journalist's job. She did the job of a journalist is what I'm trying to say. And got a real sense for what goes into it in its real essence. And understand that's why it's so good. That's why the work is so good. And I think as she goes forward, Spike, she will only get better and better and better and better.
Yeah, precisely. All the more reason she should be going to Princeton for free, or Lafayette. But moving on a little bit. I just love every time there's a natural disaster. These psychotics that are allegedly Christians turn around and somehow turn the natural disaster against the victims. And amazingly, very often, it always seems to be when there's a lot of darker-colored victims is when
without a doubt.
Osama bin Robinson comes out and gives his diatribe.
Oh, there's a new, there's one for me. To, was that Osama bin Robertson?
Yeah.
Okay.
The leader of Al-Qaeda, yes.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. I got to write the, okay, Osama bin Robertson, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. And also the snake oil salesman as the...
Well, the hustler of Sea of Galilee mud mask, among other things. How can we ever forget?
Yeah, it was Ben Mankiewicz, actually, was the one years ago who referred to him as a snake oil salesman, which is a pretty accurate description of him, actually.
Where did you get Osama bin Robertson, leader of Al-Qaeda?
I've been saying that for years.
Oh, that's yours?
Yeah. This goes back to, like, the days when Bruce was on the horn.
Okay. Well, consider it stolen.
That's fine.
But, well, but you want a real gagger for the Robertson business? This really will just make you... Tomorrow in Virginia... in Richmond, to be precise, they are going to inaugurate their new governor. Governor. I'm sorry, he's not an Austrian. He's worse. Tomorrow, and I know it's tomorrow because the press release says tomorrow all the way through it, and it says for immediate release 1/15/2010, which would oddly enough be today. Tomorrow, the new governor of Virginia is going to be inaugurated, and his name is Bob McDonnell. Okay, wait for me just a minute here before you start screaming, Spike, because you're gonna. Bob McDonnell is a proud holder of a degree in law from Pat Robertson Law School.
Liberty.
No, Regent.
Oh, okay.
Pat Robertson Law School. He got his degree via his 1989 thesis on putting religious right dogma into law, and it was after that that the Christian Coalition helped put him into his first elected office, and of course Osama bin Robertson founded the Christian Coalition. He has been funded to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars by the Robertson Al-Qaeda. See how I'm putting it to you, Spike?
It just flows.
No, it does. It does. It's a beautiful thing. And so McDonnell won this race that was ineptly run by his Democratic opponent in Virginia. And he's getting inaugurated tomorrow. And guess who one of the honored guests at that inauguration will be?
Well, it has to be the fearless leader of Al-Qaeda.
Absolutely. Going to be there, sitting there, smiling, maybe speaking in tongues, sipping on a little strychnine, may have his favorite snake in his pocket. You never know.
Is this governor, what, do you know a county in Virginia this governor is actually from, like where he had resided before he became governor?
That I do not know.
Okay. I was just curious. I recently got in a little story, a female in Amherst County, which is Lynchburg, Virginia. I'll just leave it there.
Oh, that's some creepy territory. Are the people of Virginia going to sit there and watch him sit and bow and scrape and kowtow and acknowledge Pat Robertson and think that that's okay?
From what I know about Amherst now, I'd say yes, definitely there. And actually I've noticed there's a rising current of, troll callers to left-wing shows that will humor them and take their calls. On Sirius, like Alex Bennett, I'm not sure if you're really familiar with who he is. He does just on Sirius now.
Not so sure, no.
Yeah, he was big like 30 years ago in like San Francisco or something. But like a lot of people in California mention him, though. Like Sparky probably knows who he is, but everyone on the East Coast doesn't if they don't have Sirius. But he does a show on Sirius Left. And it's like every time he gets a right-wing call all the time now, they're all from Virginia. Which is kind of funny considering not that long ago, the Republicans lost Virginia, so I guess they're getting it back. But I guess you shouldn't be surprised either. I mean, what's fair is fair. Virginia's history is also the capital of the Confederacy in Richmond at one point. I was at the Museum of the Confederacy, so I saw firsthand. And by the way, you want to see creepy, look at some of the stuff they have in an exhibit there, and then think about what the teabaggers are doing and see the very similar propaganda pieces between the Confederacy and the Tea Party malarkists. That's a new word. I'm combining malarkey and
anarchist. Yeah, that's it. You know, you're on a roll tonight, Spike.
Sometimes I would do that when I'd go to city council meetings. I would just make up words on the fly, and I'd drive reporters crazy because they'd be like trying to get sound bites out of me, and I'm making up words. Malarkist. But I don't know what's going on in Virginia, but I guess they must be like just an anti-American sentiment in a way that's always been cultured there. Ironically, the state where our first president was from. I don't know it's weird though, because, I was in June in Virginia, and, I was in the Richmond area, so that's a little bit different than the rest of Virginia. Probably in large part because it was the more densely populated minority community, so not as right wing. In certain parts of Virginia, when I was driving through, you could clearly tell you were in right wing territory. And then in other parts, it seemed pretty middle of the road. So I guess, unfortunately, for the sane people of Virginia, the misinformed and miseducated have control again. But then again, that's also in large part, I'll say it's on blue in the faces, because the Democratic Party was so, pardon the expression, they shot their wad with the Obama campaign, and as far as grassroots get out the vote.
Right, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I mean, they were like, oh, we got Obama elected last year, we don't need to go out. And the teabaggers won this year because of that. I mean, they should have used a fraction of the resources that the Obama campaign used, they probably would have won elections for funding colleges, like here, a community college lost a vote for something, but we passed table games for gambling here, so now we're going to get a college built, campus built because of that, but, you know, because the teabaggers came out, up in the Milford, Pennsylvania area, the very northeastern corner, which is like real right-wing territory, maybe the strongest stronghold for teabaggers in the state. They hugely defeated a library, getting funded, and basically now the library has even less funds now because the teabaggers came out and fought the library getting funds, because, you know, who the hell needs to read? It's mind-numbing what really happened this last election, and it really goes to and to be completely honest, I mean, yes, he's trying to be better in emergency response with Haiti, Obama, than Bush. I do love the right wingers crying, but how come we're so much quicker at Haiti than our own? Look at who was in charge. He's kind of still the same status quo in a way as the Republican Party. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party have too many mutual allies that are working against us. I think the problem is that corporate America wasn't too worried about getting out the vote this year, and that's why the Democratic Party didn't get out the vote. Because the Democratic Party, they're only worried about the big elections because corporations are really worried about the big elections, unless, of course, it involves attacks against them locally, then they use their little goons known as the teabaggers. The only reason I even switched was to vote in the primaries to be in a Democrat. And I got to tell you, it's a waste. I might as well just be an independent and not even be involved with it. I mean, it's an embarrassment. Anyone who sits here and just always rationalizes everything Obama does is a fool. I mean, you're being played for a sucker, just like Bill Clinton played a lot of people for suckers. I mean, granted, yes, Obama's a better speaker than Bush. Yes, he's a highly intellectual compared to Bush. Yes, he might want to do something when the acts of nature strike down on the earth instead of just, you know, being on vacation. Yes, he actually also responded about the underwear bomber quicker than the shoe bomber, you know, with Bush. But in the same, I mean, it is kind of almost like the Who song, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I mean, corporate America's winning the battle with the healthcare debate. You know, corporate America.
Well, that's because they own the means of they own the means of disseminating, of they control the debate, Spike.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah, I mean, and a lot of people don't understand they control the debate. When they see these these big buses covered in graphics about fighting healthcare, and they don't understand that the corporation paid for that. That wasn't paid for out of just a couple of volunteers' pockets. They're easily bamboozling, a little too easily bamboozling a lot of the American public into believing that when they create these bogus AstroTurf outfits, that these are real grassroots efforts. I don't know. There's a lot of optimism in this country, and I have to be honest, I think it's unfounded.
Well, there's a difference between optimism and wishful thinking.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. But
frankly, a lot of this, you know, we're not at the one-year anniversary yet, and it remains to be seen whether this was this has been optimism or wishful thinking. The miserable, what's so frustrating about, as I noted, in Massachusetts, is that the right wing gets to focus on nothing but Massachusetts. I mean, I was reading a New York, maybe a Washington Post story about the race there, and lo and behold, you know, what's going on? Well, there are teabag and booger eaters from Michigan and Rhode Island and all over America coming to work on Man Candy's campaign there. And meanwhile, Senator Coakley has been asleep at the switch. She had a 30-point lead and just watched it disappear.
Yeah. But, it's a party doomed to fail, and the country is doomed to fail in large part because of that, too. I mean, I don't know. I feel like the Democratic – this is an obscure reference only baseball fans are about to get – but I feel the Democratic Party at this point is being run like Omar Manai with the Mets. You look at the people who are running the party, and you're thinking, how the hell are they still in charge? I mean, that's really what's going on. It's an embarrassment. It's a plain and simple embarrassment. They had a majority, and they couldn't even do anything with a majority. That's maybe the most frustrating part. You think the Hammer would have had this kind of trouble if he had the head count that the Democrats had? Not a chance in hell. That's a big thing that's frustrated me over the last 11 months is they had the majority of power, essentially, and just urinated it away.
Right. We busted our asses to give them the power, and then they didn't use it.
Exactly. So why should we go out and do it again for them? You know, in a way, the two parties are slowly digging their own grave. Of course, they've rigged the regulations and laws in this country against any independent and third parties for the most part. In most states, making it where an independent or a third party has to get more signatures to get on a ballot than a Democrat or Republican, which is just absurd and anything but Democratic. Exactly. Who's going to – yeah, you got a big turnout this time around for Obama. Who's going to show up the next time around after you've urinated it away? But before I go, a few quick points on Haiti. One is, someone mentioned it today, and actually it was a beautiful point. Maybe it was the wrong time to make it, but an absolutely beautiful point is, you know, libertarians live in this dream utopia of if there were no regulations and no government in the way and everything was just left to the free market, how great it would be. Haiti is a perfect example of how wrong they are. You want to talk about no regulations? Building codes are regulations. Gee, what were they lacking in Haiti? You know,
that's why I've been hammering that somebody needs to step up and just look at the nation and say, Haiti is where the right wing wants to take this country.
Exactly.
Religious superstition, a government too weak to serve its own people. And crony corporatism, crony corporate capitalism, anarcho-randianism, whatever you want to call it, run wild, Spike.
Yeah, and I mean, exactly. I mean, that's why it's as big of a disaster as it is. There was no government programs to handle a lot. I mean, granted, there were government officials who died in the earthquake who were in charge of the emergency as well, but in the same, it's a lot because it was, you know, hoping that everyone else would take care of it for them. And that's essentially what libertarianism, free market, is. So, yeah, there you go. But and the last thing is, I found it interesting. It looked like Venezuela beat just about everybody there. You know, evil Hugo Chavez, that socialist, that menace to society that can, who, by the way, Osama bin Robinson wanted to overthrow 5 years ago.
Didn't he call for him to be assassinated?
Yeah, him and Oliver North, yep. And because they wanted Sitco, essentially. And by the way, I don't want anything that stands in the way of Milka Duno racing any race cars in America. So Sitco can stay, as far as I'm concerned, in the hands of Hugo Chavez. And if anyone's wondering who that is, just Google the name Milka Duno and you'll understand why I really like Milka Duno. I also wonder if Cuba's there and the American media isn't mentioned. I'm not sure if Cuba really has many people to send outside of their own borders.
I think it was mentioned on the program last night that they have a number of doctors already there.
Okay. Because I know Cuba only has limited, essentially, numbers from, like, military personnel to help out. Basically, they just have a military big enough to protect the island.
If they had anybody in a uniform there, we'd be dropping bombs on it.
I just find it interesting that, the right wing loves to carry on how these guys, this guy Chavez, he's such a menace, he's terrible, he's a stuff, blah, blah, blah. Gee, he sends relief to Haiti when we had the oil prices through the roofs a few years ago for home heating oil. Gee, it was Sitco and Hugo Chavez that was the one giving the best breaks to the people of America, not the corporatists. So I'm not a Marxist. I just want to point out that the people of Venezuela's leader a little more worried about the poor than many Democrats and Republicans in this country. If everyone thinks about it, Hugo Chavez, well, he might be a little eccentric, a little more worried about the poor than most of our leaders. But I just wanted to end on that note. And if you look at Haiti, that's a perfect example again of that.
I think you're right, and it's all very well said, Spike. Have yourself a great weekend, okay, brother?
All right, man, you too.
All right, later. Calling from Toby Hanna, PA. That's our good buddy, Spike. And continuing onward, or not. Okay, lines are all open. That's cool. We've got a few minutes left if you want to chime in on this Friday on the front porch. A couple of things to get to. Just to let you know where they stand... As I said last night, I believe it was, the story goes from being about the disaster in Haiti to being about the way that people respond to the disaster in Haiti. We already know what a loathsome charade, what a sickening performance Rush Limbaugh has given over the last couple of days. I played you some of his audio last night. You're a bigot with tampons in your ears. Jesus. But you love it when people shoot back or fire back or at least try to counter him. And bless his heart, Roger Ebert, over at RogerEbert.com, has an open letter to Rush Limbaugh, and it says simply, "You should be horsewhipped for the insult you have paid to the highest office of our nation. Having followed President Obama's suggestion and donated money to the Red Cross for relief in Haiti, I was offended to hear you suggest the president might be a thief capable of stealing money intended for the earthquake victims. Here is a transcript from your program on Thursday." Now remember, that was his complaint last night. "Well, you're taking me out of context. I did say blah, 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 but I did not say not to get..." Justin of Raleigh, North Carolina calls in and says, "Why does Obama say if you want to donate some money, you could go to whitehouse.gov to direct how to do so? If I wanted to donate to the Red Cross, why do I have to go to the White House page to donate?" "Exactly. Would you trust the money's going to go to Haiti?" "No." "But would you trust that your name's going to end up on a mailing list for the Obama people to start asking you for campaign donations from him and for him and other causes?"
"Absolutely."
"Absolutely." As Roger Ebert notes, that's what was said. Unlike you and Justin of Raleigh, I went to Obama's website and discovered the link there leads directly to the Red Cross. I can think of a reason why anyone might want to go via the White House. That way they can be absolutely sure they're clicking on the Red Cross and not a fake site set up to exploit the tragedy. But let me be sure I have this right. You and Justin agree that Obama might steal money intended for the Red Cross to help the wretched of Haiti. This conversation came 48 hours after many of us had seen pitiful sights from Port-au-Prince. Tens of thousands are believed still alive beneath the rubble. You twisted their suffering into an opportunity to demean the character of the President of the United States. This cannot have been an accident. A day earlier, a soundbite from your show went viral, in which you said Obama would exploit the situation to please his black followers, both the light-skinned and the dark-skinned ones. Setting aside your riff on Harry Reid, consider what you imply. Obama will aid Haiti to please African Americans. Haiti has lost untold thousands of lives. One-third of the population has lost its homes. Countless people are still buried in the rubble. Every American president would act quickly to help our neighbor. You are so cynical and so heartless as to explain Obama's action in a way that unpleasantly suggests how your mind works. You have a sizable listening audience. You apparently know how to please them. Anybody given $400 million in a contract must know what he is doing. That's what offends me. You know exactly what you are doing. And it's true. He does know exactly what he's doing. Millions of Americans are responding with compassion and decency. Rush Limbaugh is responding with his usual sleazy urge to make political hay out of a situation. But don't worry. Others are responding the same way. I offer you the madness of Glenn Beck.
I also believe this is dividing the nation, correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, to where the nation sees him react so rapidly on Haiti, and yet he couldn't react rapidly on Afghanistan. He couldn't react rapidly on Fort Hood. He couldn't react rapidly on our own airplanes with an underwear bomber.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make sense.
Okay, let's help them make some sense of it. Couldn't react rapidly on Afghanistan. Barack Obama reacted, I think, poorly on Afghanistan before he was called upon to do anything. No general had said, oh, it needs to be done yesterday. He did it anyway. So that one's a lie. He couldn't react rapidly on Fort Hood. What did they want him to do? Jump in front of the shooter and take the bullet? The shooting was over. The response was appropriate. He couldn't react rapidly on our own airplanes with an underwear bomber. Again, what did they want him to do? He responded to it more quickly than Dim Leader responded to Richard Reed the shoe bomber. What is the standard here? So let's continue just for the sake of I don't know what.
When he did react to Fort Hood, he talked about something else for the first 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I think it's
if George Bush would have waited several hours before he came out with a press conference on this.
But he did!
And then he would have been in a place and he would have said, hey, by the way, I want to thank everybody. And, hey, shout out to you and shout out to you. And it's great. Hey, listen. What
the hell's wrong with Beck's voice? Been drinking the rot gut again? Oh, Glenn, that way lies madness.
And everybody's aware of this.
Oh, wait, he's already there.
Haiti thing. Can you imagine what would have been said about him? Well, that's what the president has done now. Three different events. And Haiti is the only one. I think, personally, that it deepens the divide to see him react this rapidly to Haiti.
Yeah, because what America really wants, Glenn Beck, is to see those Haitians suffer a little more slowly, to die in a little more agony, to transcend their humanity by wallowing in just a little more misery. For your sake, Glenn Beck. What a sick bastard. And by the way, an update, you know, last night we talked a little bit about American Express saying that they would rebate, the fees that they charged their cardholders making contributions to Haitian relief. Remember, that rebate will come at sometime, March, maybe April, who knows. You know, there's money to be skimmed. Well, I didn't get to it last night, but you need to know, and this is another one of those beautiful moments of the expertise of the Horn family. I got a note from Maura. And Maura simply said, it is simple programming. It's a simple programming change to stop the processing fees. Basically, it amounts to, and this is, if merchant code equals charity code, then move zero to processing fee. That's maybe five keystrokes, tops. That's it. But meanwhile, others are catching on because I saw stories today that Visa will be making a tidy sum out of the goodness and generosity of the American people. And I haven't seen anything about Visa waiving its fees or rebating or anything else. We are talking here about Shrunoff monsters. Ron in Raleigh writes in and says, you asked whether the people of Virginia will sit by and let the boy toy wax ecstatic over his mentor, meaning McDonnell in Virginia, Bob McDonnell, wax ecstatic over Osama bin Robertson, the leader of Al-Qaeda. Oh, I'm going to get a lot of mileage out of that. Ron says, the answer is yes. I was born and raised in Virginia. That's why I'm now Ron in Raleigh. You guys make this show. You know that? You do. And let's see what's going on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Pants on the ground, pants on the ground. You acting like a fool with your pants on the ground.
Hey, Jethro, what's up?
What's going on? Do you know about that deal?
No.
Yeah, that's actually it's the best part of this American Idol show is the auditions. They had this man on there. He was 62 years old. He's a little bit past the age limit, but he was he's a former civil rights protester. He's been beaten and dog getting and. He came on with his Pants on the Ground song, and it has taken off. They've already made a Facebook site for him, and it already has like 250,000 members.
Wow.
So yeah, he was pretty much the big hit on the show last night. I had my wife has kind of got me interested in watching it, and
well, you know, that's one of those things, you know, you take one for the marriage once in a while.
Yeah, well, the auditions are, it's better than the singing. And, it was good. But this guy was a real American last night, singing about Pants on the Ground, you know, which is basically, he was busting on the, you know, the style of not having a belt and you know, it's a jailhouse thing, too.
The low-hanging pants.
Right, right. So I don't see how that got a hold on our culture, but it's it's everywhere. So, yeah.
See, when my pants start falling off, I feel a sense of shame. But I guess that's because I'm an old codger now.
Right, right. So you'll be seeing T-shirts. You're going to be seeing a lot. There's going to be a lot of
pants on the ground T-shirts.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of collateral. Welfare off this, I guess. It's going to be something good. So, and yeah, this Haiti stuff, you know, all of this is madness. I was watching Idol to try to get away from some of this other depressing stuff. It was really funny. Have you ever watched the Trailer Park Boys?
Yeah, Yeah, I have a couple. I got put onto that a while back. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And that's, I think you can get all 7 seasons of that on YouTube.
Yeah, that's outright insanity.
And that is crazy. But it's funny, and I think the main guy behind it is this Bubbles character, who has the, you know, the big pop bottle glasses and the
yeah.
So that's what I've been doing. I mean, this Haiti stuff and Afghanistan, and it's just another example of course, the earthquake is not our fault, but the conditions there are.
Precisely.
And the CIA has been installing dictators, and Dynacorp has trained the police, and, I'm sure that is a big, big distribution place for cocaine coming from Colombia and who knows where, and flights from the CIA and stuff. So, yeah, it's that way for a purpose. And that serves our purpose. It doesn't serve the purpose of the humanity or anything else, but I think that's the whole problem with us, our interference. So, and Afghanistan, the madness, we're going to be there forever. Nothing's ever going to come of that except a lot of money wasted and more.
Alexander garrisoned several towns that he built from the ground up there in what became Kandahar province of what was then, I guess, Bactria. And when he left, they didn't go home, and they were left there forever.
Mm.
And there's an element of what we're doing in Afghanistan that smells a little bit like that, because we can't leave, because the minute we leave, everything goes back to hell. And you know, you've got American-led forces dragging little boys who are little boys out in the night, handcuffing them and shooting them in the head. You know, that just doesn't end well.
Right, and you're also having these what they're calling targeted killings. I mean, they're not, it's like being out on patrol or anything like that. They're using these drones, and they're going, and if there's a house with 50 people in it, then 49 of them are good guys, and there's one bad guy in there, that's worth it to them to kill all 50. And the blowback.
That's a calculus that's hard to get your mind around, isn't it?
Yeah, the blowback is going to be bad. You know, and it's not going to hurt these government idiots and the CIA and all these people. It's going to hurt the citizens of this country, and it's not going to be a pretty sight, I don't think. And I'm not sure what's going to happen. We could end up like Haiti easily, or Afghanistan or something.
Well, that's kind of been a theme the last couple of days, Jethro. That's why that's where they're trying to take us.
Yeah. Well, they're going to be spending all the money on wars and these terrorists and all this other stuff, and some of the ways of the American life, our standard of living, are going down the tubes, and it's already started. So, and what gets me, I was reading an article about I think it was William Spalik, and he was saying, you know, we're calling every attack that happens now, we're calling it a terrorist attack.
Yes.
And a terrorism is really basically an act of violence against the civilian population.
In order to further a political or social goal, yes.
Right, yeah, your target's not military, your target is civilians, and that is where the terror and the fear and all that stuff comes in. And so this, it was an act of war when they had this, CIA thought they had this guy who was a double or a triple agent. They thought he had all this pressing information, so they rushed him right in, and bing, and kaboom. Those are casualties of war. That was not a terrorist act. That was an act of war, because there were no civilians involved. And he even went to say that this thing down at Fort Hood was not a terrorist act. It was all military people that got killed. It was an act of war, not an act of terrorism, because there were, I'm sure there were civilians on post, but everybody, targets were other military people.
Right.
So, but they want to, this terrorism, there's a, Al-Qaeda on every corner. And so a friend of mine in Walmart the other day, and he rents apartments out. Anyway, he had rented an apartment out to a international student there at the College of West Virginia. I mean, Mountain State University. And somebody turned
one of his renters in called up and said there was a terrorist living in one of the apartments.
Oh, dear God.
And Homeland Security called this guy and asked him if he had a Pakistani student living in his apartment. And he was laughing. He told him, he lied and said, no, he looks kind of Filipino to me. So it turned out that some neighbor had seen this Filipino.
And decided he was an Arab.
Yeah, automatically thought he was a Pakistani or so.
And, you know, if they're Pakistani, they're automatic a terrorist.
Yeah. And, who knows, pretty soon the Filipinos could be included in that anyway, because we're killing in Yemen, Somalia, the Philippines, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, Colombia.
We're killing wherever anything gets in our way, Jethro.
Yeah, and who knows where else. So, is everybody a potential terrorist, you know, now that we're out there, just killing anyone that doesn't believe the way we do? It's madness, I tell you. There's no other word for it. It's, our country, our culture, our values have gone insane. I don't know where it's going to end. You know, it's like rolling the dice and you're throwing up and...
Well, I think you've got a pretty strong suspicion of where it ends. And yeah, I would say it's probably not an ungrounded suspicion, Jethro. Unfortunately, I've got to go to the quitting place because we've run over time. But good to hear from you, my friend. And give us a yell back next week.
I'll talk to you next week, and I'll definitely be there at the post Robert Kennedy Jr. ass whipping of John Blankenstein.
Hot diggity! We're going to be there too.
I'll see you at the party, buddy.
All right. Are you going to be at the debate?
No. Couldn't get a ticket or anything. That's
I might be able to. I might be able to wrangle you a ticket. Shoot me an email, okay? The bobkincaid@gmail.com address.
Cool. Sounds good, Bob.
All right.
If you can wrestle up too, I'll take that.
All right. Shoot me a note.
Cool.
All right. Later.
Bye, Bob.
Bye. All right. Let's keep things rolling. Oh. Okay. Maybe not. Well, that's probably a sign that it's time for me to close out this Front Porch Friday edition of The Horn, because it's, 3 minutes past 9 here on the East Coast. That means it's Malloy time on a Friday night. Jump on over there. Enjoy Malloy's 3 hours. That's what I'm going to be doing. Thanks, everybody, for making a wonderful week of truly you're my connection to sanity, and I thank you for it. Thanks to all of our chat room moderators. Thanks to Lottie and Sue. Thanks to News Ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. I can never thank Ben enough because, well, frankly, everything that happens here happens because of Ben's work at White Rose. Thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! To tonight's Friday on the Front Porch edition of The Horn. We'll sort of catch up with stuff from previously in the week and have a darn fine time doing it. Kind of gray here in the hills and hollers, but you know what? It ain't freezing, so that's a bonus. And I'm happy, and I don't have a space heater going here in the tiny little space that is The Horn studio. And yet, I am still comfortable. I like that a lot. You know, most times, except in the height of summer and the miserable depths of winter, we can do a show back here without having to worry about the, you know, artificial heat or cooling. It's pleasant, it's tranquil, it's wonderful. And in this case, I'm sitting here with the very last, because I've doled them out to myself as though they were precious, because they have been. The News Ninja Susan put me on, well, she had previously put Agnes on to something called the Republic of Tea, and Agnes was thrilled with it, and Susan didn't want me being left out, so she sent me a little traveler's tin, which I'm going to hang on to because it's just cute as heck and handy as hell, a little traveler's tin of ginger peach decaf. You know me, I'm decaffeinated. Now I'll get the emails about, oh, well, you know, what a wussy you are. Oh, you're decaf, Bob. You don't want to see me on caffeine. You listen to the program, don't you? Speed me up a little bit. Just do that and see how you like it. It ain't fun. But anyway, so I'm sitting here having the last bag of ginger peach decaf tea, which is just damned pleasant. And it's really tea, you know, it's decaffeinated tea. It's not all herbs and flowers and butterfly wings and so forth. There's real tea taste in there, too, plus ginger, plus the taste of peaches, which I adore. And, I'm ready for 3 hours of radio. How about you? And I think we've got 3 hours of radio in us tonight for this Friday on the Front Porch. You know how Friday on the Front Porch runs. Really, if I'm to be completely honest with you and utterly candid, I have to say that, well, Friday on the Front Porch is no different from any other day of the week, except for Moran Monday and Wednesday prayer meeting. And frankly, they're no different from any other day of the week, because the Morans ye have always with ye. And so too with the religious fundamentalists. And we've got some Moran stories tonight, and we've got some religious fundamentalist stories tonight. But the principle behind Friday on the Front Porch actually arose.